This is William Fink, and this is the Krista Denia European Fellowship Forum. It is Thursday, November 18th, 2010. That was a bluegrass band, and I like bluegrass music. Bluegrass is really seen as a bridge between Celtic folk music that the Scots-Irish came here with and what is today,
okay,
modern American folk music. And modern American country music. So I like, there's a lot of good bluegrass.
Yeah.
I love Celtic folk music, but bluegrass is great too. Hello, Bavarian Man. Hello, Dorcas. Hello, Sussex Man. Hello, Tia. Hello, Papa Cat. How are you doing today?
Hello.
I was hoping this would be a little better attended today, but Danny Do Right and a couple other people, they always say they're going to be here, and they never end up here. I don't know. They're busy. I guess it's hard for people to put aside one couple hours every other week. I don't know. I don't get it. And for the Americans during the day, most of them are away working.
Right, at work. Yeah.
But Danny managed to get here at the end, didn't he, last time?
Yeah, so maybe he'll be here this time. And Alan Fadler, too, because Alan Fadler stopped by yesterday.
Oh, good. Oh.
And I told him he was early.
24 hours.
It may have even been, I'm sorry, it wasn't yesterday. It was the night before last that he stopped by.
Oh, that's good.
And I told him he was 2 days early. And he said he would try to be here, so we'll see if he can make it or not. Can't force people to be here, right? But we can try. I was just going to ask, what's going on today? What did you say about Alan T? I'm sorry.
Well, all I was going to say, he's had a lot of ups and downs in his personal life at the moment. And, with his job and his wife's lost her business. And it's looking pretty grim as far as I understand the economic outlook for him. So, he's probably having to work a lot of odd hours.
Well, we'll have to bring him to New York where there is no economic outlook because there's no economy.
Well, I think we're heading in the same direction.
There isn't really any economy in England either.
Well, you know something? Here, I put in a little editorial up on one of my business sites on yesterday morning. And basically, people here, well, we have a lot of gas reserves here, natural gas. And if we could take advantage of such an energy supply, perhaps we might attract some industry back, right? Because New York used to be, in the 18 and early 1900s, there were 30, 40 automobile manufacturers in New York at one time. And all kinds of engine manufacturers and manufacturers of other hard goods. And today they're all gone. And these people don't understand that if you don't produce anything, you can't have jobs. And they are all against harvesting this natural gas. They vote against it time and again. They submit and collect petitions against it. They all have signs, with slogans on them that show their position on natural gas drilling. If we don't harvest our energy, this is just one example. If we don't harvest our energy, we have no economy. And green is the new red. There's no doubt about it. It's Bolshevism all over again. It's a different form of Bolshevism, but the end result is the same.
Same, yeah.
It's suicidal.
Over where?
So I took a picture of one. I took a picture of one house and put it on my business website and wrote about their hypocrisy. That because they have a sign up that's against gas drilling, and they have a satellite dish in a pickup truck.
Right.
I wonder how much oil it took to launch that satellite.
Yeah. You're taking care of rice.
How much oil does it take to run that pickup truck? And they don't want that. And they have this no drill, no spill sign.
Mm-hmm.
On the front lawn. Well, no drill, no spill where? In somebody else's backyard or in yours?
Yeah.
It's absolutely hypocritical. I don't. People just don't think.
They don't connect the dots, do they?
Yeah. No, not at all. But one aspect of their life is totally disconnected from all the other aspects of their life. They could take advantage of all this oil. Well, there's another house I'm going to post that has a no drill, no spill sign up, and they have a whole front of their house loaded with plastic Halloween decorations.
Yeah.
That's absolutely hypocritical. It's okay to drill where? In China?
Or in the sea.
In South America, spill it somewhere else. Just don't spill it where I live.
Yeah.
So
we've got a similar situation over here.
Right, and we have no industry because we have no energy, and we can't harvest it because these tree huggers are stuck on stupid, basically.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Well, of course, Yahweh said that they would come and take a great spoil. That's why we have no industry. They've already been taken away by Yahweh's enemies.
Even from a secular perspective, I mean, we don't even have to bring religion into it, and these people can't see their own hypocrisy. That if we add Christianity to it and find out that most of these people are indeed Christians, well then how hypocritical are they? 100 times more so.
They might say they're Christians, but they don't understand God's word.
They don't understand their own words.
They're not teaching them.
They don't even understand their own words. They're never going to understand the word of God.
That's just why there is no industry. There's nothing in Britain either.
Well, these people, I've decided that they don't deserve anything.
There's only one way they're going to get something, and we know which way it is.
In the meantime, we'll just have to sit here naked with them and face the fates that the unfortunate souls like Alan Fadler have faced, right?
It's incredible. Most unbelievable. Oh, there he is. Old man off.
What else is going on?
Well,
what else can we talk about today?
Adding to the last thing, the peculiar thing of that gas, what they are doing here, or at least they are planning and they're doing research on it, you're talking about getting gas out of the soil. They are doing research here, getting gas into the soil. This is absurd. What they have is the planning, and they're busying you with a huge machinery standing here and vibrating the soil to make these echographical researches in the bottom to find out what the holes are in and the underground areas. And they want to pump in Russian gas as a supply. Now, the people here are quite against it, because if there was no gas, why should you put it in? And if it is in, who is going to tell there is no leak? That we are sitting on a bomb. It's so absurd it is here. So it can be upside down even. That's what I wanted to say.
Why would they want to pump the gas into the soil?
It's crazy. Safety supply. Just a supply. Ridiculous. To get it from one soil, from one ground area in Russia, pump it over huge pipelines, and then pump it in the soil again, because, that's maybe a cheaper way of storage.
Yeah, they don't want to buy a storage tank? That's crazy.
It's totally ridiculous.
Pull the storage tank.
Have it for safety. But it is so dangerous to put it in the soil where there was no gas. You can't risk that. If there's somewhere a flame or an earthquake, and there's a tiny leak, what's going to happen then? You
well, if Yahweh wanted gas to be in that soil, it would probably be there.
Do it. Yeah, yeah, that's right. But it is so absurd. The whole world is getting upside down. I can't see it in another way. Every day when you're listening to something somewhere, you get the most absurd things to hear.
But, well, if somebody wants to take such a huge risk with no guarantee of an expected result and save money on a tank, then there must be a Jew involved, right? That's the only thing I can
sure.
see. That
sure.
lives in another country, maybe in France or something, far away from, from there.
Yeah, the French. Yeah. I think that the Frenchman absolutely would have refused and would have done anything in its power to stop the nonsense, to break down these machines or blow them up or fill them up with all kind of rotten tomatoes or artichokes, whatever.
Well, right, but that's only because the Frenchman would be concerned about the truffles.
Yeah. You can't guess them out. That's
he would do it, but he would do it for all the wrong reasons, right?
Most probably.
Yeah, I always worry about anybody who eats frogs' legs.
Yeah, it's
I can't even understand that you're eating that. Well, the snail I can understand, but frogs' legs, nah.
Well, my mother and swimming. My mother teases me to this day. I was about 6 years old. I had just learned how to read well enough to read a menu. And my parents had me in a restaurant, and they told me I could order anything on the menu that I wanted. And I saw frog legs on the menu. I wanted frog legs. And they were out of season or whatever. They didn't have them, and I just threw a temper tantrum.
Oh, dear.
And I still get, my mother still teases me about that.
Yeah.
I was all proud of myself. I could order anything on the menu I wanted, and I could read the menu, so I wanted frog's legs. That was the first thing I read, I think. That's why I wanted them, and I couldn't have them.
Yeah.
I still get teased about that. I was probably being saved from frog's legs and didn't know it, right?
Yeah.
Because I haven't had them since. I mean, I never had an opportunity to have them again. And
you
I'm
better
probably
never try. Yeah.
I'm sure I'm a lot better off for it.
There's so much more better to eat. Why should
well,
you?
Well, the French eat all sorts, snails.
They're like the Chinese of Europe. They're like the Chinese of Europe. They eat anything.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true.
So do the English. They love their winkles, which are a little tiny snail, and they eat all the seafood. But winkles and mussels and all those sort of things. And they love their eels. I think we mentioned that before.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how each country has these foods. Well, it's one way of selling what the ocean's giving, you know, to make money, really. And it was the Jewish people that used to have these stalls in London with all the seafood on. Because I can remember thinking, why are they selling this stuff, you know, if they're sort of so religious and keeping the laws?
Because they care about profit, and they don't care at all about goyim.
No.
Yeah. Just a money business. Yeah. Unless
it's like it's the
somebody.
Jews pushing all these chemicals in our foods. Aspartame and all these saccharin and all these things. That's all the if they cared about us, that they would be putting stevia in the food, right? Or some kind of natural sweetener.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I realised how the duplicity of them. When I was in London, jobs were easy when I was young. You could just change your job if you wanted to up your status and salary. And I got this interview in a merchant bank. And I'd got the job. They'd got the accountant to come and talk to me. And I just happened to mention about leaving a bit early on the Sabbath, Friday evening, because in the winter, you know, it's dark there. We kept the Sabbath on that night time. And the whole interview changed. it went as flat as anything. And at the end, they said, oh, we'll let you know. And I knew it was amazing how the tables turned on me, all because I wished to keep the Sabbath. And it was a Jewish company. So it just shows you how hypocritical it all is.
Yeah, they'd rather hire Goyim that would do their bidding and hell with the Sabbath. They don't care about the Sabbath.
I mean, I'd never mentioned it to any employer before, but I thought I was safe here, you know. I used to go in an hour earlier on a Friday so I could leave at 4, and I thought, oh, well, you know. But I never told them before the reason, but this time I thought, oh, I was safe, you know.
Well, if you were a Muslim and wanted to wash your feet 5 times a day, you'd have probably gotten the job. And worn a burqa, right? You'd have probably gotten a job, I'm sure.
Yeah, so it's all hypocritical, absolutely.
Mm. Well, Krista Geniger is now ranked 116,318 in the world.
You say 116?
Wow. 116.
Wow, that is a tremendous improvement, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That's good.
It's almost scary. Believe me, it's...
Yeah.
It's almost scary.
So how many visits are you getting a month now, or a week, or however you define it?
About 14,000 visits a month.
Wow.
Wow.
And over 6,000 of them are inked individuals.
Wow, it's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. So each person comes to the site about 2.5 times a month.
Wow.
Eli's site is Eli's site broke the top 400,000 this week.
Mm.
Oh, he's about 391,000. So not that I'm wild about everything on Eli's site, but we're moving up there, right?
Yeah.
That's good. Is Robert not having his microphone open, or? Is he closed off or whatever?
Well, he's on the road, and yes, his microphone's closed. I mean, I could open it if he wants to say something, but
okay,
he has to request it.
Okay, can't make it out of the the chatting. I said that I gave him good evening, but maybe he'd like to come in. He's only saying hi.
Yeah, right. He can request to talk.
Okay.
He knows how to do that.
Yeah, okay. All right, so it is. Yeah, we have a funny world in today's times. Yeah.
Well, I'm still posting a lot of the material that Sussex Man had supplied to me, and last week I posted an audio library onto the Saxon Messenger site, and some of the audios. Yeah, you know, I had the Myron Fagan Illuminati articles there. Now I have this. This proofs of a conspiracy and something called wheat receipts by Dr. Stuart Crane. And he was actually a professor at Bob Jones University in the 70s.
Oh.
And they actually had, he had a lot on the ball. He didn't have it perfect. He didn't understand identity, of course, but he had a lot on the ball about this internationalist conspiracy. And I thought they were worth posting, so I did. I also posted Ennius's History of the Britons and in audio. And I'm going to go to the site that makes these audios and look for more, actually. But I listened to Ennius's History of the Britons in the car on the way to my son's house in Virginia last week.
Oh, yeah. Virginia.
And I was kind of disappointed in Ennius, but... I mean, some of it was all right, but it didn't really get to the level of history that I had actually hoped. I have it on Krista Geniger in text form, but I hadn't yet had the chance to read it. And it's really not that long, I should. And I posted Grimm's Fairy Tales and Tacitus's Germania. And there's several other books in the collection that I've yet to post. So that site now has an audio library.
Did you see the one about William the Conqueror? That's a very good one.
Yes, I did. And you know, I'm glad you recommended it because I wasn't sure the quality of it. I want to, that history of Scotland and history of France, I wanted to listen posted them a little first before I decided to post them or not. Yeah, I'll post the William the Conqueror one next.
But it goes into a lot of history, and what struck me was interesting. It mentioned the fact that he required huge provisions for his invasion of England, and he was sending out all to the neighbouring countries. And I immediately thought, that's where the Jews came in, giving him loans. Probably why the Jews came into the country after him, and they probably got him to agree to introduce their Shetar law. And as a consequence, we had the Doomsday Book, and all the properties became registered, and we've been paying for it ever since.
And it couldn't have been better named, right? The Doomsday Book.
That's right.
That's right.
But actually, some call him, rather than William the Conqueror, they name him William the Plunderer.
Yeah, that's right.
the picture of the Battle of Hastings that Sharon Turner drew, what was a different one than the one that it's usually heard in the mainstream, was that basically William did have a claim to the throne that wasn't as legitimate as Harold's claim, and William had sought to enforce his claim, and he landed at Hastings and battled the Saxons for it was like a one-day battle, that Harold and his brother died, and the battle was more or less fought to a draw. But because the English king and his brother had both died in the battle, that the English nobles agreed to honor William's claim. That's the way Sharon Turner depicted it. That they didn't really, the Saxons really didn't lose battle, except that their king died, so that the nobles agreed to honor William's claim. That's the way Sharon Turner depicted it, as far as I remember from the history of the Anglo-Saxons.
Right.
Well, according to that book, that talking book, when he landed, they were surprised because there was no opposition. You know, they sent out scouring parties, and there was no one there to
Harold was up in York at the time, and he did a week's forced march to get down there again.
Yes, but before he realized that, you see, Harold had just defended himself, his realm, against an invasion from Norway, and defeated Harold. I think his other name was Hardranga or Hardraga. He defeated the Norse king Harold, who tried to invade England, and on a march back to London, he had actually released a lot of the citizen soldiery, and only kept his thanes.
Right.
But when he realized that William had landed at Hastings, he had to face him without a good deal of his army, but with a much smaller army than the army he could have had.
Right.
So it was only a matter of fortuitous timing on William of Normandy's part that he was able to defeat him. That's
quite a tragedy.
Yes, it was a tragedy. Yeah. But that's, it's Yahweh's will, right? What happens, and we have to accept it as that.
Yes.
But that's the way it worked out, and it was just very fortuitous on the part of William of Normandy, because he had actually been held up from sailing for several months because of inclement weather preventing him from crossing the channel.
Yeah, I know.
So if it wasn't for the Norse king's invasion, it very well could have turned out to have been a very different history.
I'm sure it would have been.
In England, yes.
Certainly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But we may have maintained a real Gothic-speaking Saxon kingdom, right?
Yeah. I always was taught that at this time when they did the Doomsday Book, Harold put a lot of the kingdom to the sword, and something like 2/3 of the Anglo-Saxon population were destroyed. It was a very high number.
Well, you know something? Mm-hmm. I really don't know, and I was really hoping that when I read the history of the Anglo-Saxons and Sharon Turner that he had gone into that, because I've heard conflicting reports. However, Sharon Turner stopped at William's ascension.
Right.
And never went into the Domesday Book or the replacement of the nobles with Normans.
Yes.
You know, I've always heard that the English noble class was more or less destroyed or forced out and replaced with Normans.
That's right, there were.
That was.
And even the language changed, because that's how we, something that was dead and on a plate was known as mutton, whereas when it was alive and in the field, it was a sheep, which was completely Anglo-Saxon, whereas mouton is French.
Yeah.
So mouton, everything changed, the language, everything.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Mm. Well, in Saxon days, the language of the Saxons was almost the same as what they spoke in Germany. They could more or less understand each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's expectable. Yeah. But then it's different.
Because I read in the paper the other day, this professor in the language school was reading out some Middle English, well, read out two papers, one in German, one in Middle English, and they asked him what the Middle English one was, and they all said German, but they hadn't realised it was Middle English he was reading.
Right, that Middle English was a lot more German than we know. It was basically a German dialect.
Right, That's what basically...
I think it was the French influence that changed it all, wasn't it?
Now, I have a book upstairs by L.A. Waddell. It's called The British Eddas, E-D-A-S, right? I'm probably mispronouncing that word. I always do. But, L.A. Waddell's assertion was that the Eddas of Snorri were never Icelandic. They were actually the variant of the Gothic language that the Saxons of England spoke.
Oh.
And that Snorri misinterpreted a lot of them because he assumed that they were an older form of Icelandic. But when he made his version, and L.A. Waddell presumes to retranslate them in this book from what he believed was actually Gothic language that they were written in, the manuscripts that he located.
Right.
And it's called British Eddas, and it's something I looked it over in my my prison stay, and I wanted to get into it in more depth, but I wanted more information about it. So it's something I put in the back burner, and it's still on the back burner. It'll probably stay on the back burner for too long. That always fascinated me.
At one point, the French of the Normans wasn't the French of today. It was known as the Romance French. It was a different French to what the French speak today. There is still a residual of that type of French in north parts of France and in the Channel Islands.
Well, it wasn't until the time of Napoleon, I think, that there was any attempt made to normalize the French language throughout France, right? I mean, it was like Germany.
Yeah.
It was a different dialect in every valley, basically.
So what I'm saying is the French of the Norman French was, nothing like the French of the France today.
Well, all I know is I look at French and I just shake my head and I say, no way, I'm not doing it. It's horrible.
Oh, by the way, Bill, I met up with your friend from the Ukraine.
How did that go? With Michael,
Well, he stayed a couple of nights with me, and he's seen the sights of Bexhill.
Right.
And it's very interesting, the information, hearing about what goes on in the Ukraine.
Right, and he's actually a New Zealander. I mean, I'm not. You have to know that, but I'm saying that for everybody else's benefit. He's a New Zealander who's relocated to the Ukraine, where he's a farmer and has a Ukrainian wife and children.
And he said his wife's related to the aristocracy of Russia.
Yeah.
Well, she is a good-looking woman. I mean, she, I wouldn't worry about her her ethnic background.
Yeah.
Oh no, I mean, and I mean, there are lots of Israelites in the Ukraine. There's actually there were a lot of Germans there too, who occupied parts of the Ukraine.
Right, the Volga Germans. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
But one reason he said the main reason for going to the Ukraine, he didn't want to be in the hock to the Jews, because if he tried to buy a farm in New Zealand, it cost you know, they'd be in the hock to the Jews for the rest of his life.
Yeah, yeah. That is
and that's the way it works. It's incredible the way they've really pressed our farming industries, and most of us are totally oblivious to it.
Yeah.
And he said in the Ukraine you can't buy land there, but you can rent it. So he's able to rent the land at a reasonable price. But he was able to buy a house. He's got a house and 1.5 acres of ground. Guess how much it cost?
Yeah.
How much?
How much? In dollars.
Well, a house on an acre, I mean, how big is the house? A three-bedroom home on an acre and a half?
Yeah.
Where I live, what would probably be about $150,000, where I live. Yeah. But I'm in a pretty remote farming area, right?
Yeah.
But
a house, a three-bedroom home on 1.5 acres down by New York City is going to cost you $750,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he said it's a four-bedroom. And the walls are 2 foot thick, so it's nice and cool in the summer and warm in the winter. It just cost him the princely sum of $500.
Wow. That's what my taxes are every month.
Yeah, telling me.
Pro thing seems to have a good deal.
Well, right, but he's in, he, like I just said, you know, the more remote you get, the cheaper the houses. He's on the upper peninsula of New York, of Michigan, in the upper peninsula, and it's winter there 9 months a year, and there's nobody there, right? I mean, he lives in a very remote area, sparsely populated, and it's, yeah, you know, the upper peninsula of Michigan, there's mining up there, and there's, a lot of lumbering, you know, lumber mills and paper mills and things like that, but it's not like the, you know, the big city or the suburbs. You're remote. I mean, it's remote. And it is a great deal. You could buy a house cheap there, but that, now try to find a job. That's the trade-off,
that's
right?
The difficulty. Yeah.
Yeah, the jobs are pretty known.
Yeah.
He was surprised how few people that were in the UK onto the two seed line.
Yeah.
I said, well, there's a lot more than what there used to be. And he's looking into the possibility of buying a farm in the north of Scotland, just in case things go bad in the Ukraine, and he's got a bolt hole.
Ukraine is a central. The Ukrainians have been through so much in the last 100 years. I don't know how things could possibly get worse.
He said it's a marvelous growing country. The soil's about 3 foot deep, and you can never plough to the bottom of it. And he said all along the roads, there's just fruit everywhere, it's just for the picking, you know.
Well, that was the breadbasket of Russia, right? The Ukraine.
It was.
Yeah.
Until Chernobyl.
And he says they get proper seasons there, and he said when he left it was in the 70s, but when he came here it was cold and raining, so I don't think he was too impressed with the British climate.
I don't know what he expects to grow in Scotland, in the north of Scotland.
There are lots of big farming areas in Scotland, actually.
But you said the north.
Yeah, Caithness. Well, there are pockets of good arable land up there. Probably be mainly dairy and sheep.
Yeah.
Well, here in upstate New York, it's mostly dairy and sheep and steer.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of, there's hardly any grain farming. There's some corn. They grow a lot of corn up here, but most of that is also for the dairy industry to feed the steer with.
Although it's a poor climate generally, they do intend to make up to it for a certain extent because they have very long, as you know, being so far north. The day is very long in the summer, so plants get a chance to catch up, you know, with their English counterparts. So it's not all doom and gloom up there. And also, I mean, in Perthshire, my sister's actually on the Murray Firth, and just that's very far north. It's up near Inverness, and because it's sheltered by the Grampian Mountains, it has a very equitable climate, and it's surprisingly quite dry there, and they do grow quite good crops. So there are pockets of good growing areas in Scotland, but you just have to pick your area.
And your wallet.
Well, that's why he's going far north, because, you know, it's cheaper up there. Nobody wants to go that far north. So.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I'll hand the headphone over to June.
Hi, June.
Jay Durham, he can have a go there. Yeah.
Hello, June.
Hi, hello. June. Right. Yeah.
How are we doing today?
Very well, thank you. We had a very interesting time with your friend, Michael.
Yeah, he seems like a very good man. I'm glad you were able to meet up.
Yes, we had a really wonderful time with him. We learned a lot, and I'm sure he learned something from us. So it was mutually advantageous.
Wonderful.
Yes.
I saw the emails that you were going to meet up, but I couldn't respond to them with the funds and all that.
All right. We did manage to... He found the door, and we answered the door early in the morning and spent a wonderful time with him. So when I first saw the man at the door, I thought, oh, is this to read the gas meter or the electric meter? But when he took his hat off, I thought, no, it's a gentleman.
Yeah. That was nice talking to him by Skype. So we had a nice chit-chat with him on Skype.
Yes.
It was very nice to have him.
Yes, he was really lovely, a lovely person to have in the house.
Well, our gas and electric meters here are up on a pole at the front of the property, and everybody could read
right.
them coming by.
Right, you can read it. Yeah.
Oh, well.
But we don't have a gas meter, but the electric meter anyway.
They're all different in England. They have to come into your house very often. At my home, the gas man can read it from outside, but they've got to come indoors for the electric meter. So we get accustomed to strange men wanting to come in.
Yeah, but it's easy here. I just have electricity. There's no more gas.
Yes.
We don't have gas. Maybe that's one of the reasons why they are pumping gas in the soil. We don't have it. It's too expensive, all these pipelines. We have to do it with electricity. I don't mind. And central heating is by oil. So, you have a few cubic meters of oil in your basement in a tank, and you will survive. The people who are coming to pick up the meterings, they are local people from here, so we know them. So we don't mind though they're coming into the house.
A few cubic meters, that's a pretty big tank.
Yeah. Yeah, the maximum load is 5,000 liters. Yeah, 5,000 liters is quite a lot. It's a big tank. A real big
tank. My oil tank, the maximum load is 250 gallons. But that's only 1,000 liters.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about 1,000. That's not so much. Yeah. And I'm using about half of the tank per year. Yeah, for winter times. How about it? So it will costly. It's costly. one of these next weeks, he has to come in to pump it full to get the tank to the rim full. It's again 1,500 euros. Yeah, it's a lot of money per year, but okay. as long as we can have it.
Right. But I've seen some people here and they're already having gas in the kitchen. Then I simply said to them, where do you get that from? Then they have the bottles in the garage, these big cylinders. I said, never in all my time. You better take electricity. Having these danger bottles in the garage, I don't want them.
Well, I used bottled gas for a lot of years.
Yeah.
When there wasn't any local gas served on the house, the bottles were very useful. And we never had any sense of danger with them.
But they were small bottles. You know, small cylinders.
Well, a 32-pound cylinder. We always had two, one on hand.
Yeah, and, available. That's
very
fine.
Good for cooking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We cook on propane here.
Yeah, propane, that's what it is. That's what I wanted to hear. That's much better as butane.
Well,
propane is very fine.
I use butane, just whatever they supply. But
right.
It was very good, clean and safe, and did very well.
Propane is a bit more hot. And if you mix it with oxygen, you can go over up to 1,500 degrees. That means you can melt even quartz. That's what we used in the laboratory.
All I was doing was melting butter for cooking and baking. It wasn't doing anything exciting like you were, Matthew.
Expectable. I was working in the laboratory.
Yes.
In the glass department where these glass blowers and they were using it regularly. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was at the university, the technical university in Delft. That's many years ago. The good old days. It was the end of the 60s. Yeah, it was my first job in the Netherlands. That's long ago.
I watched my husband many a time purifying gold with a blowpipe and a methylated spirit lamp.
Yeah, that works.
And
that will do.
I asked him how he knew it was ready. He said, you have to read the scriptures to find that out. And so, of course, I did. When he sees his face in the globule, he knows it's pure. And that's where God has we are there as well. When he sees his reflection in us, we'll do.
So
it was a wonderful lesson to learn as a young woman.
Yeah. Some technical experience is never bad.
That's true.
What is he saying? Cool one. What about return the space god flying files? World press punk. What the hell is that? But that's indeed, if you are working in a laboratory or anything like that, then you can pick up a lot of information how they do. And they will tell you what and how. Oh, there's a skull coming in. That must be a very old skull, Icelander. But I don't see the name on it. Yeah. It's probably an Iceland skull. I don't know. Okay. This is one weird skull. Yeah, it looks like an alien. Yeah, it was found in Mexico. Yeah, but it don't say how many years ago. Good old Mexicans. Didn't they do any research on the DNA? That makes it more important for all of us. What is the DNA saying? Where did the man come from? How old is he?
He might have come from Spain.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
One of those other Jewish enclaves.
Yeah. It's the old thing.
Another thing they did very often in South America was they liked to bind boards to the skull. I'm talking about the Aboriginal people, right?
Yeah.
They liked to bind boards to their skull to change the shapes of their skulls.
You mean to elongate them or something?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And they did it quite often.
I remember. But they did that.
So I would think that a lot of the that archaeological finds such as this are no determination of race until the DNA is actually studied, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because we can't be assured that the skull that we see is the natural shape of the skull because of their social practices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This looks pretty bad. It's like a cross between an ant and a human.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Yeah.
Okay, Icelander, I think you spend way too much time looking for this weird stuff, but that's all right. He loves to come up with all this oddball stuff.
Yeah.
Strange stuff.
Yeah, maybe they do have these kind of curious skulls also to be found in Iceland. I don't know.
Oh, he's just always looking for different things that are used. He finds a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. Well, you can find a lot of interesting things on the internet. That's clear.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a weird dude. Okay.
I wouldn't go that far.
We won't call him names. Glad that he is there, by all means. But we now know that even our voices... Hey, what the hell is that? Idiots, get connected. What is this? I hate this.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know why the signals are dropping. I can't guess. But Avengers having a hard time. ProSync disconnected. And now Bavarian Man disconnected. I can't figure out why.
Okay, back again. They just dropped me off. I don't like that. Well, anyway, it's not as worse as it was on Sunday evening. Then I couldn't get out. Oh, yeah, I wanted to do a greeting to Dorcas, even. I punched it in, and I said, tap, and the computer was upside down. I said, hey, all is gone. What is this? And I tried it again, and I had to start up the computer 4 times. And then I said, no, okay, I'll keep listening. I don't write anything in the chat room, for something is wrong. And later on, they gave me information from the computer company. That there was something wrong. I said, no, I don't like that. Oh, am I dropped again? Oh, no, that's something else.
Was that on Sunday, right. Bavarian Man?
It was on Sunday? Yeah.
I put a message in there, and it wouldn't take my message. 4 times typed it in. Not to say hello. I wanted to make a comment to L.I. James, but it didn't accept it. So
there you are. That was a European problem.
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was only on my side here in Germany. No,
well, Tasha was notorious for its reliability, right? It's terrible.
Mm.
Yeah, but that was so worse that it never happened before. So it was new to me. So I said, hey, it's probably here on this side.
Well, the last time I was on talk show a few weeks ago, I just gave up after a while because I kept being knocked off and then I couldn't get back in. And I just thought, this is ridiculous, it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
Yes. I wonder why that's happening.
I just think it's a rubbish setup.
Oh.
It's being consistently unreliable. And I'm prepared now just to resign myself to the downloads.
Yes.
Yeah, what you can do as well, Oh, yeah, by the way, that's right. Concerning about that from Sunday... I went here to the Saxon Messenger to pick up the Testament of Issachar. And I made a copy of it, and I have a copy in here. But the problem is, now I have a central column and a huge amount of information which I know about, round about. Isn't there another opportunity to print it in HTML or so? Or did I overlook somewhere the right knob to push on? What is that about? I like to have it in a bit less paperwork. There's so much paperwork.
I don't understand.
What's possible, Bill?
You can cut and paste it into a word processor. That usually works pretty good, right?
Yeah, but normally, Spokey, you'll find somewhere a knob to push on and say this is HTML. And then I get a page full and that's it. And then now I'll get the central column. Over 9 pages. Some. Oh! Here I have one that's completely only in the middle portion. And there's no information left or right side. I wanted to copy all these 12 patriarchs' informations And on normal paper, on the normal A4 paper size. I don't know how to do that.
But, well, if you go down to the bottom and you click on printer-friendly version, anything that's in a book like the Testament of the Patriarchs will have a printer-friendly version link at the bottom. And you should probably try that, right?
I'm just having it in my hands. I see the Earth globe, that means the projection, and that's at the bottom of the place. And
are you on a Testament of Issachar page?
That's what I have in my hands. Page 6 or 7. Oh, 7. Oh, I don't have the 7. Oh, there was nothing on that one. There was a blank page.
I'll put a link in for you, right? And click on that link and go to that link.
Yeah, wait a minute. Oh, here. Let's see what's happening. If it does something. So far, not. Okay, here she goes. Whoop. No,
I don't have the printer-friendly version able for you to access it. That's the problem.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing that right now, right? Now, if you hit the refresh button, at the bottom you'll see a link under the text that says access printer-friendly version.
All right, and I did that, and bottom? No, he's still working on it. Oh, again, that nonsense. Now in this, and at the bottom. Okay, here it is.
Click on that.
Yeah, log in to post. And print it. Yeah, well, I can print it right now. The printer is out. And I don't have a printer program in this one.
Well, then, yeah. Why bother?
Okay, I can do it. Then I can do it in the other printer afterwards. But keep it on. Then I can later on take it on the other computer. That one has a printer option.
Okay, I'll keep it on.
But now I know it's in. Okay.
Very good.
But
what
is it also on to the other one?
Matthew?
Well, I wanted to have a print, and a full paper print, printer friendly, of these, the ones of Zebulun, and of the Testaments of Judah, Zebulun, Issachar, etc.
I can send them to you, Matthew.
It's the same stuff then. Okay,
yeah.
If you want, you can. Okay, anybody, please. I like to study them. All right, then I'm coming back. Thanks. And here we are. So now I'm back again. Yeah, it's good study material, and we're going to be back again on Sunday on the Testament of Issachar, and I like to study it in advance. Makes it a bit better and easier, at least I suppose. Yeah. I hate that chat always. What is that? Freezes? Oh, freezes, yeah. Yeah. Okay, then that's settled. All right, I know what to do.
When we're finished, I'll send it to you, Matthew.
Yeah, okay, then I'll switch on the other computer, and then I can do it. I can print it. That's no problem. Yeah. Okay. Again, the problem solved. Now that's easy. Yeah. Well, that's easier as what I got in the morning in by the post. I'm still angry about it, but
Yeah.
Well, I was cheated again by the family. Yeah. I lost in the meantime on the family affair now. 17,500 guilders, and divided by 2, that makes $8,500. Because of the filthiness of the judges in the Netherlands. They just play. You can't believe it, how awkward and how filthy these judges are. I didn't know that. I knew it was bad. And I was warned by someone who was years ago in the Netherlands in jail. And stayed there many, many years. And it was illegal. He was supposed to have killed his wife, which he never did. It's a horrible situation. Well, we are not allowed to say much about it, but he warned us. if everything, anything what happens in your life, stay out of the dredges. They are totally untrustable. And now I have to find out. It's like Sodom and Gomorrah. It's incredible that they are simply having some information, and then they tell you, no, you're not going to get your money. We find this, and we find so. They are stealing you, robbing you your own income. It's horrible, but I'm going to have a prayer for it, and I'll send them some awkward words for their heads. They are cheating you. They're robbing you of your own money. That is, and then in a family affair. Now, I'm still angry about it. That's why I'm more on a silent in the evening.
Well, that's what the name attorney means.
I never had
friends,
such an awkward experience. Yeah. You said it.
To take
you
on one gift to his master, that's their job, to rob you.
Yeah, that's the way they do. That's really what they do. It's so a shameful thing, but that's today's times. Yeah, now I know what the end times day is, and how. Oh, and the interesting thing is, who's going to be judging the judges? This is important. They will have a portion. You better don't have their shoes on. I always say, oh. For all these filthiness, any judges in today's times are doing so filthy, they have no information whatsoever. You are not allowed to say something. When you are going to say something, you have to do it via one of these solicitors, and you have to pay all these bills. And they simply make it in that way that you're not going to do it, because it's too expensive for you. Nah.
Hello? Hello?
What happened to him? He's still there.
He's disappeared.
Yeah, he's still there, but there he goes. Dropped, and it took the server a minute to realize it.
He probably unplugged his headphones from the...
He probably blew a fuse.
Yes. Yes, evidently he was pretty upset. I don't know what...
Interesting, your friend from Ukraine, Emily, he studied law, and he was very much into common law, and he said he's got this special document... he's going to try it out, which allows him to travel without a passport, you know, as a sovereign.
Oh? Oh? How's
he's got it affidated and sealed, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know something? Countries don't have to honor that.
I think you can't come into the States in that way.
maybe different, different Commonwealth countries or something. Ukraine and New Zealand, they're not Commonwealth countries, are they? Is New Zealand a Commonwealth country? I don't think
so. Yeah, New Zealand. It's under common law. And under common law, you have a right to travel without hindrance.
Yeah. Okay, so he could go to New Zealand and Australia and Britain, but the Ukraine doesn't have to honor that.
That's Russia. Yeah. Well, if you like to go
there. But he's got a special thing. I forget, something they call an apostle or something. And it's sworn, and it's got a picture of the crown, so it looks a very official document, you know.
Oh, okay.
I know New Zealand started as a Dutch colony, didn't it?
Could be, yeah.
No.
Well, it was discovered, wasn't it, by the Dutch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is right. That is right. I lost his name to him.
Well, I'm ignorant of the history of New Zealand. Oh.
Yeah.
But he said he thinks, you know, New Zealand will sever its Commonwealth links before Australia, a bit way things are going. He said all the white women there are marrying Maoris, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's
yeah.
incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. Really madness. How do they dare? But they still
a little fascination with animals.
Imagine. Yeah, strange. Yeah, we are in the end times, absolutely. And it can't go on many more in only a few years, I suppose. But I don't believe that we will have to wait another 10, 20 years. Then it will be so rotten that there's no normal human being left over. Yeah. It will be a real great thing when Joshua comes back. The sooner the better.
Yeah. Well, the Ark didn't have many people in it, did it?
That's right. Yeah.
Eight people was the last remnant.
Yeah.
It could shrink a little more, eh?
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's come across. I came across a very rare book, evidently it's job to get hold of, called Bombing Vindicated by J.M. Spate. Emily was in the headquarters staff of the Whitehall during the war and gives you all the inside information about all the things that Churchill got up to.
Oh?
I don't know if anybody's heard of that book.
No?
No.
So far not.
Who was the author again, Chris?
J.M. Spate. It's spelled S-P-A-I-G-H-T.
That's unusual.
Yeah.
No, I've not come across it.
That must be a rare book.
But Churchill was a real coward, wasn't he? When he knew the bombing raid was coming, he hoofed it out of the city.
Well, it talks about how he was trying to get his generals to use anthrax on the Germans and all that sort of thing. And how he was annoyed because he sent bombing raids into Germany and they hadn't retaliated. He was wanting them to retaliate against Britain, you know.
Yeah. That was the idea, yeah.
Well, I haven't read it all. I've only read bits of it, but it looks like it might be interesting. I mean, like all these books, you get a bit of boring bits and then some nuggets of good information.
Yeah. But how many pages was it? 40?
Wait a minute, I'll just have a look. 72, A4.
72.
Well, that's after I reformatted it, after scanning and what have you.
Yeah, all right.
So how did you come across it, Chris?
Yeah.
Well, somebody from America sent me the photocopies of it, and then I scanned it.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Well, it's the same people who sent me that one of Count Sherup Spiridovich. Don't know if you've heard of him.
Yeah.
He was a 2C line general in those days.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was related to the first Russian royalty, the first Tsars.
Oh.
Roig or some name like that.
Yeah. Unpronounceable for us.
Yeah, I had a hard, somebody got a hard copy of the book, and Bill's friend from Ukraine, he was very interested in that, so I let him took that away with him, because he said his wife would be interested in that.
Believable.
And because it's got the double-headed Russian eagle on the front, so that would be...
Oh, right.
Yeah. I hope
he wants me to order a copy of Bill's Christogenia. He said I'm not to post it because he thinks it might be seized by the customs, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry, you collected on the next time, but... The only thing is, I'm having trouble with Bill's publishers. Every time I go to order something, they put something extra in the basket I didn't want.
Yeah.
And you can't get rid of the damn thing. Otherwise, when you... And I mentioned that to our friends from Russia, and he said, he'd had the same problem.
That's never happened to me, and I order my book the same way everybody else does when I need a copy of it.
Well, I mean, what happens, I go in, and then they say they've in the basket they've got a CD of your download, £4 something. Well, I mean, I didn't order it. I mean, it'd be fine if I ordered it, but you can't get it out of the basket.
Wow, that's strange.
Oh, that's strange.
I mean, I have to go in again and see... If I can, and then I keep getting emails from them saying, "Oh, there's you've still got something in your basket," you know.
Yeah. It's weird. I mean,
whether it's the Dirty Tricks Department, I don't know.
Yeah, well, they're probably Jews too. Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it one minute.
Mostly. Business is business. They are always in.
And I think they put, hoping when you check out, you won't notice, you know, by the time you checked out, you won't notice you got this extra item you hadn't ordered.
Yeah, you know, a company did that to me, and that exact same thing happened to me. I had ordered some EMSO back in June when I sprained my ankle from this company, and then in September or October, I ordered a bottle of Chlorella from the same company, and I ended up with an extra bottle of DMSO. I said, what the hell? It's only $6, but I'm like, what the hell? I didn't order this. And I went back and looked at the email, and sure enough, it was there. I just didn't notice it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bill.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, I've just found that book, Bombing Vindicated by Spate, on the internet. So I can print it off. It has 157 pages. You said 72 were they're small pages.
Yeah, this is A4.
Yeah, it's probably A4.
Well, I scanned it, you see, and reformatted it.
This is at jrbooksonline.com.
You know, I downloaded that website, right?
Oh! No, I didn't know.
And I'm going to repost a lot of it on my Mein Kampf site.
Okay.
I think his website's terrible. He has some good material there, but the website's terrible.
Yeah.
I've downloaded, I don't know, I download websites. When I have something to read from a website, I don't go read it. I just download the site.
God, that's easier. Take it through.
It's all right if you've got plenty of storage space.
Yeah, even.
Yeah, well, then I could text search on it and stuff. Not all sites have text searches, right?
Okay.
My sites have pretty good text searches.
So will that search through the PDF as well?
No, my sites, you can't search through the PDF, no. But you know, most of my PDFs, I also have the text up.
Because the PDF has a search on it itself, so you can't actually get into that. Because I'm just wondering, because when you got Google Desktop, it seems to manage to search the, I'm sure it searches the PDFs as well.
But, well, that's because Google has software that actually takes apart the PDFs and runs OCR on them and indexes them. So they create HTML versions of PDFs every time they see them. But where I don't have the resources to do what Google has. You know, I have to post the text into my database as I get the time to post the text into my database. Now, you'll see on Clifton's site, I've posted some things recently that I haven't had the time to post the text to. So when you click on the link, you'll get only a PDF instead of the text with the PDF link at the bottom. So eventually everything will be, you know, will be put in. But it takes time to do that. It's not... that easy. With Clifton stuff, it's not easy because I have to worry about fonts. He uses all these oddball fonts that don't appear on the internet on most computers. Yeah. Well, I have to replace all these fonts with fonts that are standard. I've been trying to coax Clifton into using, you know, being more careful about the fonts that he uses.
Mm.
He uses Semitic Dictionary font and Word Perfect Greek fonts and Hebrew fonts, and they just don't display on the internet. They'll come out as boxes for most people.
Yeah.
And I try to avoid that.
Doesn't he have a standard computer?
No, he has all this old software, WordPerfect software and IboWorks and Logos and some of these software dictionaries that use these oddball proprietary fonts. But when I take one of those documents and put it on the internet, you're not going to see any of that stuff. You're just going to see boxes.
Yeah, I know.
So I have to go change all the fonts to standard fonts.
Yeah.
And it's a major thorn in my side. It's a pain in the butt. And whenever you see a document on Clifton's site which doesn't have the text, you'll know that there's a lot of proprietary fonts in it. So all I have up there is a PDF. Until I could get the time to replace the fonts with standard fonts. And it's a huge hassle. I mean, I did like 500 documents last year when I put a site up. And I still have a lot more to do.
So you can't import into a Word document and then highlight it and change the fonts automatically if you've got
the
fonts.
No, you have to
there.
Change them all by... Well, you could change the font, but then the letters won't make any sense because it's not Greek.
Yeah.
You have to redo it in a Unicode font. Now, every font has different character mappings, especially those old fonts. And what might look like an accented E or a U with umlauts in one font, it might be a numeral or something in another font.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you have to basically retype every word.
Horrible job.
Yeah, that's why my notes aren't. That's why my translation notes aren't online. I got 2,550 translation notes for my Luke translation, and almost 1,300 for my Paul translation. And those notes aren't online because the font they were done with is an old WordPerfect font. I got to redo all those fonts even before I could put those books on Lulu. I have to redo all the fonts, and that's a huge task because my notes.
So.
But those 2,550 notes probably have maybe 10,000 Greek and Hebrew words in them.
Yeah. There you were.
It has to be retyped.
You can't sort of do a software program to do it automatically, or would that take longer than...
It would probably take longer to write the program. I don't know. I'm not... maybe 15 years ago I could have wrote the program, but I can't now. I'd have to relearn Visual Basic.
I mean, in the old Unix, you could do it fairly simply with just a script. You know, like font A equals, so-and-so, then it's, so-and-so. It used to be quite easy.
Right. Another problem with that with WordPerfect is that with WordPerfect, they have these special accents that go over or under the letters that they precede, and a lot of the WordPerfect characters are actually two or three characters.
Yeah.
But where in a Unicode font that would be one character. It would be a big programming task too.
A big job.
I had trouble with some of the German. And I think where it's got an umlaut over the A or over the U, it doesn't recognise it, as a genuine file. I think the file system likes it.
Well, you can't put, even in Unix, you can't put a file name, you can't put umlauts in a file name.
No, I think that's the problem. I have to go and change it to something different.
Yeah. I've already had to change a lot of your file names, get them on the internet. The browser wouldn't find them.
Yeah, like that, the tribes of Germany in German, Stammer, S-T-A, umlaut, A.
Right, and I'm sure...
It doesn't like it.
Right. That the Sensitius project, I corrected... The German, up until about page 19 or 20, I'm looking for it now. I have to get back on that. I was on it. I spent two nights on it before I went away to my son's.
Virginia, yeah.
I can't even find the Sensitius project. I got to type it. Here we go. Oh, something didn't... How far I got on this correcting of the German.
Yeah.
And I'm rechecking the Hebrew that I already corrected, right? I'm on page 19 is my next page, so I'm a third of the way through it. Then I have to go through your English and correct the Hebrew in that. But I'll just copy that from the German, right?
And then I had to go through to collect the... Because when you're moving words, because you tend to translate it literally as it is in the German, but because their word order is different, and then you're moving it around, and then... Sometimes you look back and find, you haven't got it in the right English order, so you have to readjust it. I think June read it through and we did some corrections. Then Matthew read it through and did some corrections.
Yeah.
So I think it should be fairly well correct now. But like everything, you can go through again and see something you missed.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, awesome. We solved the major problem about the Kiffhäuser.
Yeah. The famous name, yeah.
But it'll be straight by the end of the year. I'll have the German and the Hebrew all straightened out by the end of the year.
At the moment, I've been inserting pictures, and Matthew sent some maps which show the various tribes of Germany. But, of course, they're very large maps, and it'd be difficult to display.
Right.
Unless you can cut a section out for the appropriate, you know, because if you got it on the size to fit the screen, well, the print's too small to see the actual name, so you have to enlarge it up so you can't have the whole map on the screen.
Yeah.
Now, another thing, and Matthew should know this, somebody had sent me, I can't remember who it was already, so I feel kind of bad. It may have been Matthew. Somebody sent me James E. Wise's The Seed of the Serpent in German, and I posted that on the Saxon Messenger site this month.
Yeah, that's the German version.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I did send to you. That's right. That's what Mike Halligmore wanted to see on the on the screen.
You did send it to me. Okay. Well, it was 3 weeks ago. Yeah, a lot of water goes under the bridge every 3 weeks with me. But yes, that is.
Yeah.
That's posted on the Saxon Messenger.
That's right. Okay.
Now I will probably end up posting the German copy of the Sensitius book on there also once it's settled, right?
Yeah.
But you also had that from me as well, I think. German.
That's German a possibility, thing? but it turned up in
Die Nachkommen der Schlange or something, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, the Nachkommen von Schlange. Yeah, that's the one we're talking about. That's right. That's now on the German version of the... because I had the original still in the computer, and that's why I could send it easily over.
And there's another one, the Verloren Stämme, the Lost Tribes.
The Lost Tribes, the Verloren Stämme. From whom? Who was that?
I can't remember now.
Okay, the floor on the stomach.
And there was also that one from Manfred Hess, that was about...
the puzzle pieces.
How the Romans, you know, when they recruited in their army in Palestine, the Hebrews were given land in southern Germany called
Seidels. Yeah, Baden-Württemberg. Yeah, that's right. That's a very interesting article. Yeah, yeah, that's a very basic, very real thing. And maybe Manfred has found some more about it. I didn't speak about him in the last months. But he's doing a good job in searching. He's doing his best in the time he has to find out what's possible about these peculiarities, these peculiar puzzle pieces, as he is saying.
Yeah.
That is right. He's doing a good job on it. And he was also commenting about what is it now? Our famous members' peculiar book. Sensius.
Oh, yeah.
He was also commenting and saying, I've never heard such peculiar things. What is this? He said, he is living a bit longer in Germany with his family. He knows a bit more about it. And he said, now there are so peculiar things in. He said, you have to take this as a real block of salt. And that's right. But it's always interesting to read because there are some things which are really worth it to read and to understand and to try to find out what the reality is behind it. But that's most fields here in Bavaria. That's why the Levites are living here. Said, this is a bit too hyperbolical.
He better not tell Rhea he's been reading that book, otherwise he'll be in trouble with her, because she told me it should be thrown in the dustbin.
Yeah.
Now, the day he got my copy in, he got at the same time from Berlin, from one of our fellows there, he got the same copy. Hey, one day, two copies. Two people are thinking about me. That's great. Yeah.
I sent one to Dieter Brown as well.
Right. Best you can. Maybe he has it. I don't know.
But, I didn't do you? He wanted an acknowledgement if Manfred Hesse's article goes on the web to Abendland, Morgenland, you know, his magazine, an acknowledgement.
Yeah, they should be written about. Yeah, that's right. And an acknowledgement should be written, but that's no problem. We may put it in the on the internet. And, remembering the source where it came from. That's right. If we do that, that comes from Morgenland Publishing, then it's no problem. Yeah.
Chris, to change your shopping cart on Lulu, change the quantity to zero and click Update Cart Item.
Oh, right. I'm not sure if I... Oh, right. I'll do that next time.
Oh, wait a minute.
It's not exactly straightforward, right? But the quantity field is updatable, and you just
I know. I tried to what one cart because I had two carts on mine. The one cart, you know, it had two, and I only wanted one, but I could alter that to one. And then there was another cart above it with this item I didn't want, and you couldn't. It wouldn't allow me to adjust it.
That's strange. Pilgrim said there's also a red circle with an X on the right, so you could click on that to delete an item.
I didn't see that. I have to go in and have another look at the site and see if it's still there.
Yeah. Well, have I hair?
I've got two people now who I ordered one myself, and I've got another two people. Your friend from the Ukraine wants me to order him one, and June's got a friend in Newcastle who wants me to order one, so I've got to order another two.
Oh, I'm hoping you might want to wait until midweek, because I'm hoping early next week to I have to replace the PDF file that's on there that they print from, and I have to do that in order to add the that number, that ISBN number, to the title page, so that I could get it added to Amazon.com and Barnes and Noble's.
Oh, right.
So once I do that, I'll probably correct the four or five typos that have been found.
Right.
And I'm hoping to do that Monday
or
Tuesday.
So if I leave it for about 2 weeks, that should be okay, should it, too?
Yeah. I pray to have it done by then, or else it's never going to be done. Yeah. I have to just stop answering the damn phone and get some work done. I'm hoping to be able to do it Monday. It's something I started doing. I sat down to do it 3 weeks ago and got put off and still not done. But I also have a book. My historical essay is almost prepared. I just have to add a preface to it, and I need a cover illustration.
Right.
I'd like to get that done by the end of the year. And then I want to make my biblical essays also available in a paperback version. I'm hoping to have that done sometime this year. But the historical essay book is almost put together.
I know some of the sites I've been in to try and order something from the U.S., actually, it was Eli's book when he was friendly with Clay Douglas. You know, that one on Babylon. Well, it said free postage, but when you went to order it, it wouldn't allow anybody from the UK because, you know, when you give your address, you have to say what state you're in. And of course, I'm not in a US state, and it wouldn't allow me to proceed with the order.
Well, there's a store on Eli's site now that I installed that will work, and the postage is not free for people in the UK.
No, well I've got to.
Well, it's just too much money. I mean, it's costly to send anything over there.
Yeah, well, I sent some papers to Sons of Liberty Books. You know, they're only newspapers, and it cost me £7 in English money. Well, that'd be about $10 to $12 in your money just for postage. Mm. You know, it costs more postage than the items you're sending.
Right, that's off in the coast. That's often the case. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Especially since it really isn't any more difficult to send something to Britain than it is to California. The postage is two or three times the cost.
Yeah.
But one thing is interesting. Sometimes the parcels I get from America come quicker than those internally from England.
Yeah,
I believe that too.
So if I go into Eli's site, I've got somebody who wants a book. You know, it's not on the internet. I said I'll order the book. He wants that book of Eli's, the Great Impersonation. So I can order that for the UK, okay, can I?
Hey, you should be able to order that with no problem right from his website.
Right. I'll go into that probably tomorrow.
And if you can't, it's my fault because I put the store in.
Right. Well, the other thing I got, somebody sent me a photograph in Istanbul, and it's a carving of Isaac going to sacrifice his son, a very ancient one. And I should imagine that was from the days when it was occupied by, Israelites before the Turks came in.
That's old.
Yeah.
I would say so.
Sure. That must be over 1,000 years.
Yeah. Some old building they found.
Yeah.
Excavated.
Probably, yeah.
Well, did you tell Bill about the meeting that they had to get identity get together in Ostfriesland in Germany last week?
Oh, yeah, that's
it. Oh, I did.
They had about 25...
25 people.
I think Wolfgang was sort of leading it, and their theme was from the Torah to the Talmud.
Yeah. Oh, that's not too bad.
In other words, exposing the Jews for what they are, and he said it went down very well.
Good.
Right, that's good.
Hey, that's interesting. Yeah. Let them awake all the northern Germans. Yeah, that's not too bad. Well, they have a very interesting group, so why shouldn't they do? And there are some more of these groups here in Germany, but the interconnection isn't really that much. That should be better. Now, we had a very fine one, but yeah, the leader went into the water and drowned. Yeah, strange, but it happens. Very pity. Yeah.
Especially if you get a helping hand.
Yeah.
Did you say Ostfriesland? Is that like East Friesland?
East Friesland is Ostfriesland in German.
Yeah, Ostfriesland. Right.
Okay. No, I thought that was what you said. I was just curious.
It's on the North Sea next to Holland.
Right. Yeah, that was what I was going to assume.
Yeah. That is why these waves of the sea are coming to the coastline. They are rolling up and going down. And these waves that they're saying, are the Ostfriesians still there? Oh, still there. Are the Ostfriesians there? Yeah. But let's say, when you're traveling to the north of the Netherlands and then you're going over the border to Germany, then you're in Ostfriesland. Yeah. And they are having a very interesting habit because they are drinking tea. They have a lot of tea shops there. And real tea shops with all kinds of tea, sorts, etc. Because they did have, in the year before, the colonies, the German colonies. And the ship sailors, they came from that area. So they brought in the tea and the special types of sugar, etc. So if you want to have tea in Germany, go to northern Germany. There they have it. Yeah, but here in the south, they're drinking coffee.
Now, does Nieder
import my own tea?
Does Nieder have the same connotation in German that Nether does in English?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, no, it's no, the no. furthest away lower, lands.
This lower lands. The lower lands.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in English, like it could mean the furthest away also. Yeah, you know, like, and I think that's the, I always pictured that was how it was used. I don't. Netherlands, like the far away lands.
Yeah.
It could be the lower also.
That's lower. It's always concerning lower. Because it's at the coastal area, that's definitely lower. So it's very often below water level. Yeah, no, that's right. It's nether means, yeah, you should indeed say that is in the other side. No, that's always lower lands. Yeah. French, they would say the Pays-Bas, is the lower lands for the Netherlands. In spite of that, they are saying it's Holland, but never mind. It's the Netherlands, typically the lower lands. And it's the same thing for Lower Saxony, because you have in the east, then you have Saxony, then you got Saxony-Anhalt, and then the Lower Saxony area. And many of these Saxons went straight through all these countries to the Netherlands. That was their route in the old days. And a lot of them came from the south up north. Yeah. The immigrations of the old days. Yeah, the tribes of Israel, they have been wandering around. They saw many people, many populations.
It's the Nederland in Deutsch, isn't it? Nederland.
Nederland, yeah. The Dutch translation for Netherlands is Nederland. That's right. Yeah. Neder is low. He's a low person. He's a low man. He's a Nederman.
And always get mixed up because you've got Low German and High German, the Platt and the Hochdeutsch.
Yeah, the Flat, right. The Flat, you have that in Dutch as well. You have the Flat Dutch and the Higher Dutch. You have that anywhere. That's right. Sometimes it can be so bad that you can't even understand them. Yeah, that's right.
Like in Bavaria.
Sometimes you have Bavarians here who are speaking a language that even the local Bavarians don't understand. And then I told them, how can I then from anywhere else? But you have here indeed local from valley to valley different dialects, because you're in Bavaria itself, okay, it's the biggest county in the whole country, and we have 155 different dialects, and they are just studying them. They do a hard job from the university here to keep it all on magnetic tapes, etc., to make sure that these languages or these dialects are not going to be lost, because the children of today's times, they are learning more or less the higher German, and if you want to have an acceptable job, then you both better don't have these dialects. Then you need to have higher German. So that means by time, these dialects are going to die out. That's why they said, okay, we don't take the risk, let's do study work and keep these words phonetically, etc., all on the recordings. It's not going to be lost. Yeah, there's something to say about it. And old habits and old attitudes and how it was in former days, that is all written now for historical recording. And yeah, if you want to keep your history update, then you better keep it in and don't let it be dumped away somewhere. And if these youngsters are dying out, then all is gone. So you need to have it from the older people. A pilgrim is dropped. Oh, yeah. And so they do...
Pilgrim's dropped and now Matthew's gone again.
Matthew. I understand from your friend Michael, he's listened into the forum call on a few occasions.
Good. I mean, I don't know that maybe he listens to the podcast. He has been here a couple of times, though.
That is right.
I didn't know he was here during a forum call, but he has been here a few times.
He's planning, evidently, to go to Matthew's conference in Bavaria next year.
Good. That's great. Yeah, I'm sure he's not going to find a lot of like-minded people in the Ukraine.
No.
around anymore.
He said he's been in contact with a number of Russians, but he said they're very secretive and very nationalistic, and a lot of them are into identity. But he said, you know, they're very secretive and difficult to contact.
No, I got a lot of emails last year. I haven't heard from them in a while now, but I must have got a half a dozen emails last year of notes from this one guy in Moscow that really loves the Christogenia and has read practically everything on it.
Oh.
Have you heard from him since?
Oh, it's been a while now, but I mean, I don't get to answer a lot of emails, so I might have something sitting unanswered in the mailbox. I don't know. He wrote me, I'd say, a good half dozen times first where I had the site up.
Somebody who's got a contact in Moscow from America sent me a short thing about a few weeks ago. They had a big demonstration with several thousand flags saying Moscow for the Moscovites, Russia for the Russians.
But, well, you know, they too are being flooded with people from the Caucasus mountain regions.
Yeah.
And they're not happy about it. And they consider them niggers, right? Because they're all part Arab and
this is a fairly recent phenomenon, because when I went, I've been in Russia a couple of times, and when I was in Moscow and Petersburg, I was surprised. If it wasn't for the language, you'd think you'd gone back to England, you know, about, you know, 50 or 60 years ago, no right. coloured face or anything, and, you know, the people more or less just look like us.
Right.
But... And somebody was telling me in the communist days, you know, they had the project for bringing people from Africa and indoctrinate them in the universities, but they wouldn't go out because if they went out into the street, people used to throw stones at them and,
good for them.
You know, almost kill them because they said they were dangerous savages. They didn't want them among their people.
That's exactly what
they
are.
So they had to stay... So they had to be confined to barracks. They didn't go out on the streets of Moscow.
Shows you that the average Russian has a lot more sense than the average American.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised. I mean, you know, from the media here, you know, you got the impression the Russians were very backward and slit-eyed Huns. But when I got there, I was pleasantly surprised. And it's a lot different to the media picture the media paint, but obviously they were quite poor, you know, a lot of them. And the time I went, there was a currency. It was just over the changeover from communism, you know, to the free market, so to speak. And of course, the factories didn't have any wages to pay them, so they paid them in goods. So you had all these stores along the roadside. So I had with Russians selling different produce, you know, from vases to electric cookers to irons and all sorts of things.
But while the media has, the Jewish media has really been able to succeed in dividing all of the white nations against each other first. And British Israel really bought into all of that early on.
Oh, yeah.
And just followed the Jewish media wherever they went.
You see it on my Gog and Magog slides. I show that don't get me wrong, there's a lot of good people in British Israel, but they hijack British Israel for their designs on getting Palestine for the Jews.
And their designs on getting a lot of the British people to sign on to war against Germany.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
Well, the thing is, they had to have the war, and this so-called persecution of the Jews to make people think, oh, they must have a land for themselves so they don't get persecuted anymore. That's all part of the plot. So I think it was Wesley Swift pointed out, I forget where it was, somewhere in Zechariah, mentioning the fact that Hitler would be about didn't actually mention it about raising a governor in Judah who go through his brethren like a bushfire.
I'm starting to think that that's what Daniel 12 is all about.
Oh, yeah, it might have been. It could have been Daniel's, it's Zechariah. I can't remember off that. But also, at the same time, he mentioned that Jerusalem would be inhabited again. But he pointed out in the Hebrew it meant, you know, by another people. In other words, as a result of the conflict in Europe, Jerusalem would be inhabited by another people.
Well, I would have to go study that particular verse.
Yeah, it's in one of Swift's. I think it's in the Standards of Israel one. I wouldn't be too sure about that, but I do remember reading it.
Well, what did Michael do in Revelation?
Michael,
the archangel. What did he do in Revelation? He threw Satan out of heaven, right?
Yeah.
Now, what did Adolf Hitler do in Germany? He tried to throw Satan out of heaven. Again, by ejecting the Jews from Germany. Now let's go read Daniel chapter 12, if I can find it here. I have it. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble. In other words, Michael isn't stopping the time of trouble. The time of trouble arises because Michael stands up. Such as never was since there was a nation into that same time. And I think that describes World War II. I'm leaning towards that interpretation of this prophecy.
I'm sure there's another one which is more distinctive and directed towards Judah.
Well, yeah, in Zechariah 12 it talks about the house of David no longer vexing the children of Judah. And that has to be the...
But there's one.
The aristocracy
says,
that is gone.
The governor in Judea, and he'll go through his brethren like a bushfire, which describes Hitler, you know. But I can't remember the exact verses now. Hello?
Yeah, I don't have that bushfire word in Bible works, or a phrase bush and fire, which are, equivalent. I just don't have it.
Right. Well, it might have been some other similar word, but it was definitely a fire. June's having a look, see if she can find it. Have you got the one?
Oh, it's verse 6 in chapter 12 of Zechariah.
Right.
What does that say?
In that day will I make the governors of Judah like a hearth of fire among the wood, and like a torch of fire in a sheath, and they shall devour all the people round about, on the right hand and on the left, and Jerusalem shall be inhabited again in her own place, in Jerusalem, even in Jerusalem.
Well, I can't see that as being Adolf Hitler, because it just hasn't happened yet.
Well, I think Wesley Swift, somebody pointed out that the Hebrew word there again meant with a different people. In other words, it'd been inhabited, it'd been more or less sort of dormant before, you know, it's just a sort of peasant, and then it would be re-inhabited by another people.
Well, I'm being honest with you, I'm looking at the NAS, the Septuagint Greek, and I have the Hebrew here too, and I can't read that as fast, I'm sorry, I don't see direct support for Swift's position. Now, considering the place in Palestine, Jeremiah said it would be broken, never to be put back together again, period. In Jerusalem, when it talks about Jerusalem and property, in prophecy, I don't believe it's ever talking about the Jerusalem when it talks about the future. Because Jerusalem, that city in Palestine, was to be broken forever and never put back together again. Talks about Jerusalem or Mount Zion in the future, it's talking about the seats of government of the Israelite nations, the real Israelite nations, and not the Jews.
That's
the way I interpret it. I never interpret it to mean that slum hellhole in Palestine. Because whether Arabs live there or whether Jews live there, it don't make a damn bit of difference. They're all Canaanites. I mean, the Muslims could have it, the Jews could have it. What's the difference? Those Arabs aren't Ishmaelites, not one bit. They're Canaanites, too. That's why they're Arabs. And if you study the Old Testament scripture, you'll come to the conclusion, that the only viable conclusion, is that many of the Ishmaelites in Old Testament times mixed themselves with the Edomites.
What was you saying, Jude? Oh, yes, Judah found that. Yes, June just found the same verse, so...
I've been looking over the definitions of the Hebrew words, and I really don't find port for Swift's interpretation.
Whether it was in that verse or some other verse, I'd have to look. I mean, I'm just doing it from memory, from reading it several years ago, but... could be he was quoting some other verse, but I wouldn't be sure about that.
I think if you want to find Jerusalem in prophecy, you have to look at written in America.
Oh, yes. Well, the Bible, one of the Psalms, is about Zion being in the north, isn't it? God being in the north, tied to the north. And when you look at it, all the Caucasian people virtually circle all of the northern hemisphere. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening. I just have nothing.
It's all right. I had funny noise. I thought I'd disconnected.
Oh, it sounded like somebody yawned. It sounded like somebody yawned, like we were literally putting them to sleep. I wouldn't doubt it for 1 minute.
I don't know what's happened to Bavaria, man. He's disappeared for good, I think.
Well, he can actually turn his own microphone on if he just clicks on himself and clicks Grant Talk Power. And then he wouldn't have to rely on my slow, unresponsive person to do it.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, because I saw the blue coming up and down, so I said, okay, my microphone is running. But it was blocked. I saw.
Well, you can unblock yourself when you drop out and come back in. You don't have to wait for me.
Yeah, but I thought it was my the light blue color is coming up, so I'm in the game. but now I see that the microphone is now blue. All right. But yeah, if you click on C, then the microphone should get blue. Well, I'll try when it is so far. Okay.
You
right-click on your own name, right-click on your own name, and you choose Grant Talk Power from the menu.
So I'm going to hand the thing over to June so she can have a turn now.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Nickname. Yeah. Well, for the time being, is running.
Hello, June. Whoa.
Hi, June.
Hello, Matthew. Good to hear you again.
Right.
It's a shame you can't get your own computer working there.
Well, even if it was working perfectly, I have to learn how to work it perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, it'll take some time.
I have a bit difficulty with the mouse. I think I wish it was a rat. It would achieve the point quicker.
Yeah. I had my problems with these mouses years ago.
Yeah, it takes some practice.
Yeah. For these frustrating. Moments, that's right, they were too light to me, because I'm having always a hard work to do. And then that lightweight thing, that was awkward. So I had to put my other hand on the hand to move the two hands to get the stupid mouse rotating. Oh, it was horrible in the beginning.
I think I might have a same difficulty, Matthew.
Yeah.
I'm accustomed to wringing the floor cloth out very firmly and doing everything very firmly. So I have to learn how to be light-handed.
Yeah. Don't squeeze
have
the
a light touch. No. Just treat it gently.
Yeah, I know these hard things. It's difficult to start with, but by time you will learn. Yeah.
Oh yes,
it takes some time. But it works. Yeah. I had my experiences with that. Yeah.
I'm glad it's not just me, Matthew.
Yeah.
You're a great encouragement.
Yeah, I see the problem, for I know it. Yeah.
They tried to learn me that in the company, and I was always unfortunate in the company until I got the whole stuff at home, and then I could exercise myself at home.
Yes.
Then it was a bit better. So I came in. But in the company, it was always horror.
I have the same difficulty when I try to pick something up, you know, on the watch desk.
Oh, yeah.
Tweezers. And I used to say to my husband, I can't. He said, because you're putting too much pressure on.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that was me. I never learned how to just touch them gently.
Yeah, that's difficult, yeah.
The balance that used to fly, and then there was time sweeping the floor to find it again.
It wasn't
a very profitable affair. I managed the alarm clocks, but the fine watches, oh, do you mean no?
Yeah, then you need a very stable hand to get it in. Yeah, I always have problems with the resistor or so, these slippery things in a pair of tweezers, and then trying to get them in the holes of the printed circuitry. And then I hold them, and I switch. They jump away, and then they're somewhere on the floor, and I can't find them anymore.
I know. I was much better with a sweeping brush than I was with the tweezers. I got some practice.
Yeah, I always, when I have a set of tweezers, I'm pressing too much, and then it jumps out again.
Iceland, well, you put this link in here to this OZ reconstruction of the Table of Nations of Genesis 10, and it is all wrong. I mean, this is a horrible reconstruction of habitations of the Genesis 10 nations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, then that's wrong. That's what I can see immediately. In the Caucasians, there's Gomer. And Ashkenazi in the middle there. No, that doesn't work. Macedonia, it's a bit too low. It's a bit higher up. Macedonia is more to the left up.
Well, right, and Macedonia is where Tiras should be, which are the Thracians.
Yeah.
Tiras was a Japhethite. Yeah. Javan should be much lower. Javan should be down where Argos is and along the coast of Anatolia. Where it says Magog was actually the in ancient history the homelands of the Shemitic Lydians and the Thracian Phrygians both dwelt there, not Magog.
Yeah.
Where it says Riphath, that is where... Actually, a little to the east of that is where Meshech and Tubal should be. Now, where it says Togarma, that land was actually Padan Aram, where Abraham had his wives from, where Isaac and Jacob got their wives from.
Right.
That was Padan Aram. The western part of it was Padan Aram. The eastern part of it belonged to Asher.
Yeah.
Where Assyria was. This is one of the worst maps I've ever seen of trying to recreate the Genesis 10 nations.
Who is trying to get this in a... This is rubbish. Complete rubbish. Where did they get from the mysterious word? No, mysterious. I'm Jewish.
It's mysterious, all right. It's got to be Jews, because they can't get anything right.
Yeah.
And then there's... Elam is missing here, and Aram is missing, and they're Genesis 10 nations.
Yeah.
Arphaxad is missing. Arphaxad should be right above Aram, where this map has Togarma, which just doesn't work.
Yeah. And it's Anatolian, that is far too much to the east, and it's more to the west where Magog is.
Oh, I just wonder, this map is, scratch that side, it's terrible.
Yeah. He does best it does.
Getting some feedback from Robert.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Bill.
Yes.
They say they saw Michael. Is that the Michael that's got the talk shoe on Saturday morning?
I have no idea who the Michael with the talk shoe on Saturday morning is. But the Michael that they saw is from the Ukraine.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Who's that pilgrim with the receding hairline at age 28?
The conqueror?
Oh, yeah. Prince William, yeah. Shakespeare. He's a little older than 28. Oh, I don't know. I gained about an inch of forehead in prison, and I don't think it's because my brain grew.
Well, they say grass can't grow on a busy street.
Yeah.
Well, is my hairline receding? I think not. I better keep that red hair on. Yep, that's my trademark.
Well, if the Queen is the last true Israelite, I don't really know what the future will hold for the offspring of William.
Oh, right. Who knows? We can't
tell. Yeah, yeah.
What about Harry? Yeah. Harry's not Charles's son, is he? He sure don't
look like it. No.
Of course he is Harry's, he's Charles' son. Are you telling me that Diana ran around with other men? That's disgusting. He's the model of his grandfather. Diane's father looked the young man looked exactly like Diane's father, redhead.
Well, right, but he doesn't have any of Charles's traits. How'd he miss all those things? Charles is ugly as anything I've ever seen.
Well, the two sons certainly weren't taking after him, because the elder one looked the model of his mother.
I see Charles's nose in the elder one, in William.
Oh, well, I haven't. I don't think I've looked at either of them as closely as that, but he certainly looked very much like Diane when he was a young boy.
All right.
Well, right, that's true. But in recent photos, he looks more like his father to me.
Oh, well.
And Diane had very fine, nice features.
Yes, well, Diane was a true Israelite, wasn't she? Her background was even more favoured than the Queen's, in actual fact. Her family tree went further back and was truer all right through.
Well, that could be, that could be.
But all this nonsense about Diane running around with other men, well, that's what the media was telling us, and have they ever told us the truth about anything?
Yeah.
They're not interested in the truth. They're interested in condemning
lies. Yeah. Yes. That's so. Hanging on the throne. Now, fortunately, she is the last one, correct? And she better stays on the throne for these few 11 days.
I'm quite sure she will.
Yeah.
Remember, the female line have been very strong and aged women.
And also,
they're not vaccinated. The royal family have homeopathic nosodes, but they don't get vaccinated.
No.
Yeah.
But of course, the Queen, at her age now, I don't know whether she's about 86, she just behaves like a young woman, you know. I mean,
she has tremendous energy.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
In answer to Pilgrim's question, I think we've always thought it would never happen.
Yes.
Right.
No.
And it's just intuition, but, that's what we tend to think.
What was her question, please?
Oh, I'm reading Pilgrim's question in the box below, and she says, how do the British feel about the possibility of a King Charles?
Yeah.
And we've even thought that his mother might either outlast him or he would be skipped over for William to take the throne. But we don't know. We just feel that he'll never be king.
But if he'll be the last one. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
I believe the Queen will be handing the throne to the rightful heir.
That's what I would say. Yeah. I agree. And to my opinion, the same thing, and I hope it's going to happen, in the Netherlands.
She could outlive her mother, right? And her mother lived to be pretty old.
Yes,
she did. Yeah, fortunately. That was a good one.
She might have another 30 years left in her.
Yeah?
Yes, I wouldn't be at all surprised. I believe she will be here to hand the throne over to the King of Kings.
Christ, yeah.
Because the signs of the times tell me, he said, look for these things when you're looking for me returning. There's nothing much that we need. We've got all the miscegenation and the white people being practically wiped out. I tell the Lord every day, I'll say, Lord, you must come quickly because you said you were coming for only a few. There's not many of us left.
This is left over, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we have to be patient. Yeah.
Oh, yes. We can't do anything about it except occupy till he comes. That was his instruction.
Yeah, right. And pray for it. Like Greg Howard also said last Sunday. And I agreed with them. The only thing is that he was saying we have to push a bit more to the Lord. Oh, they are having problems because I don't dare. and more and more bad every day. It is so, exactly. Yeah, I had it just today. just today in the experience. Yeah, it's ridiculous what's happening. Yeah.
Well, that occupy word really means transact your business or go about your business.
Well, that's what we're doing. And what is our business? To proclaim the truth.
Yeah, and that's what we can.
We can proclaim it. We can't convert the people to believe it. But
that's
our job as watchmen.
Right. Yeah. We are my witnesses.
The word.
Yeah, the witnesses. That's right. And it's a hard job, but okay. We'll do our best. Yeah. It's again the same thing. There are many asked, and only a few are coming. Yeah.
Many are called, and few are chosen.
You're right, right. Yeah.
And Pilgrim, I hope you and June are right.
Thing.
By experience.
He's chosen us, we haven't chosen him.
That's it. That's certainly so. Yeah.
It's always fascinated me looking back to the Exodus and the escape across the Red Sea when he's being dried up. That Yahweh used the same vehicle of escape for the Israelites, which was the in his economy of purpose he used that same vehicle to destroy the Egyptians, and the Egyptians at the time were the most powerful nation on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tend to think, in these last days that our adversary is now all powerful in virtually all respects. And yet, in a single moment, that same sort of situation can happen.
Right.
And, I find that very encouraging because our Heavenly Father doesn't change.
Uh-huh. And, It was when the Israelites knew there was nowhere else for them to go. They were surrounded, they were followed by the enemy, the water was in front, the mountains around about, and yet, taking God at his word.
Well, it sure as hell wasn't across the Gulf of Aqaba, that's all I'll say.
walked across dry shod.
I agree.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't be looking at the adversary. We should be looking at the Redeemer, because you can get very timid looking at the adversary today, because he's on every side. Everything
Anywhere.
That you think about and look at, he's in command.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't you think that the earliest Christians didn't have that same awe of the Roman Empire, right?
Sure. Certainly they had.
I'm quite sure they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Time after time. Yeah.
They were in the same position.
Right. But this time it's the worst of all, so far known. And on the large scale, world scale.
I think at the moment, the enemy are so confident that they've practically won the battle. They're getting they're telling us who they are. Of course, we who know who they are. Very nice to have our understanding confirmed by them, but then our trust isn't in anybody like that. Our trust is in the Maker and Redeemer of his people.
Yeah.
Well, they've been this confident in the past too, and those empires also fell.
They fell.
Oh yes. And this one will be the final fall, I believe, because Yahweh has said, Yeshua says when he comes back, he'll say, gather the tares into bundles and burn them.
And burn them, yeah.
And I believe there will be lots of Israelites in that burning, because they don't want the truth. They don't. Yeah. They just want to go along with what's happening.
But well, if Christ came back today and started burning tares, then there'd be a lot of Israelites actually mad at God. It actually, yeah, how dare you do that to your people?
Yes, but that won't affect what Yahweh does.
But well, of course not. But
because
that's
he reads the hearts. He knows each one of us. We can't hide from him.
But Julie also knows that our people have been starved. They've been poisoned. They've been at the bottom of propaganda. Their minds have been full 24/7 of all the propaganda that the enemy, the adversary, can put out. And it's no wonder they're in the delusion state they're in at the moment.
If they're going to change, it'll have to be quick. Because,
well, that's quite possible.
Oh, it's certainly possible, but I don't think that every single one, these people who are going along with the Judeo-Christian so-called thing, I don't think they are likely to want to change.
No, I wasn't thinking of those people. I was thinking of the majority who
don't know who they are.
Yes.
And that's our job proclaim to them who they really are, and what they do with it is their affair. If they want to turn and acknowledge Yahweh, I'm quite sure he'd be quite willing to welcome them. But it's to come from the people themselves.
Well, I don't think times are bad and they're going to get worse, people, I'm sure, will start to listen.
Well,
that's what's happening right now. Well, that's what's happening. That's why they are listening and looking so for the websites of Bill and Eli. That's why so many people are going to look at it. So they are searching. Some are negative searching, but there are a lot of them more positively searching. And
that's wonderful.
Coming out of that's hopeful. I hope so as well. We might be on the wrong side, but I think it is that a lot more are coming to broad daylight and are going to see how wrong they have been, and they are repenting. And if they are repenting at the proper time, then they have their chances. Yeah. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. And
of course, the word
we need that. Yeah?
The word does call out, woe to the false shepherds. They're the ones who are responsible for the condition of the majority of the people who are the true Israelites. They've been misled from the pulpits, and they have no idea. They're not encouraged to seek the word for themselves. They just go along with whatever rubbish is preached from one week to the next, and consequently they're without excuse to a large extent.
Indeed. No. But it is hopeful that there are a lot of people are going to search right now.
Oh, yes.
That's the best they can do. Yeah. But unfortunately, there are also a lot of people you want to give the information, and they simply turn it off. Okay, then that's game over. It's their will, and if they don't want to listen or don't want to understand, it's pretty poor. Maybe at the last moment, but it's pretty late. You better be on the right side. In time.
That's what the Lord tells us. The watchman must proclaim. But if they just say, no, we're asleep and we're comfortable, then it's not our responsibility. It becomes their own responsibility.
Yeah.
So while we declare the truth, to those who will listen, it can be redemption. And to those who can't be bothered, well, they've made their choice.
It's their choice. That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. unfortunately, that it is happening so often. Yeah, it's bad luck, but it is so. Whether it's your own family or other ones, or even good friends, it's dreadful, but it is so. And once in a while, someone comes above and says, oh, finally, there is someone. If you're yes. not going to look at the wrong way.
Yes, it's wonderful yeah, when somebody so acknowledges trapped. Their need. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in the Netherlands, I have some fellow mates finally found, because they had a lot of problems, and then they found how they can be helped by means yes. of the spirit. And then they say, but how can that be? Then I'll explain them what's going on, and then I tell them, he's willing to get you. Simply yes. is going to tease you. Listen to the words. Listen to that small voice. And then yes. understand finally what it is. And then I have to tell them what Holy Spirit is. And said, oh, is it in that way? He said, yeah, it is so simple, but most people don't want to. Which I can't understand, but it is so. It's sad. And so many more could have had. But even in my own family, so simple. Yes. There were four children. My sister and I were the only ones who were listening. The other ones, oh, they knew it better, still knowing better. Well, one is dead and the other doesn't know what's going on at all. And my sister is now sliding off. Yeah, it's tragically. But yeah,
yes.
what do you want? There's no way out.
Well, yeah. they're much more interested
in... He has to hold on until Bella.
They're much more interested yeah. in listening to that screaming electronic Jew in their living room.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's right. It's a great.
Well, that's the level of the addiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like having an I can't say this word. Anesthetized brain. Their brain is.
Yeah.
It's anesthesia.
Yeah. It's anesthesia. Yeah. That's the right pronunciation.
Resolves them
right
of all responsibilities and obligations. In yeah. concert with the religion they hear from the pulpits on Sunday.
Yeah. For what they say that is right, but they never think about it.
Born, you watch television and until the rapture or you die, one or the other.
Yeah.
So they all pray for the rapture before they die. That's their entire religion.
Yeah, and that's all. Yeah, it's dreadful. Yeah. Oh, lately we've
got... By the way, Matthew, I've sent those testaments down the line to you.
Oh, super.
They're on the way.
Oh, super. Okay, that's great. Oh, by the way, did you get... did I send it? No, maybe you didn't get it from Albert Jacobs. You didn't get an
email from me. Oh, yes, I got that. I did a couple of German articles.
Right. And they are, if you can translate them, you better do, for that is very, very interesting what he has been saying, and about believing and about knowledge. And that's done very, very well. And I also sent it to for Wolfgang, and he immediately sent the information to Jacobs back, and he said, put me on your mailing list. This is what I want to know. And the article is from 1995, so it's 15 years old, but it is very good. He has been explaining that very well, and also on the Sunday, all the festivity days, etc., and all the day and
oh,
night.
Yeah. When starts day, when starts night. Lecture, didn't
and
he, Matthew,
extremely
last...
well.
He gave a lecture at the last get-together at Bad Tynock last year.
On
when the day really began. And so it's not in the evening like the Jews would have it, but on the sunrise. Yeah.
Exactly, and he is giving exactly all the pages in the Bible where it is written and where it is logical that it is in the morning where it starts, and it is twisted by the Jews time after time. And I said, oh, fortunately, somebody from Germany is going to see it. And he did a good job on that, so I was amazed about the article. That's the right thing. It would be something
we have to ask him whether it is allowed to do. To put it on the German version on the website of William. That will be a good idea. But then maybe I'll ask it for him. Yeah, tomorrow at the internet. So I hope I'm not forgetting it. Then I'm asking it tomorrow, and then we'll find out when we can put it on the website with his name beside it. It's very good. He did an excellent job on that. Yeah, I was amazed about it, and so was Wolfgang as well. Now you see it yourself. I said, "Hey, there's someone who's writing it in a proper way." I didn't expect it, but he did a good job. Yeah. So once in a while, all kind of victorious things are just bubbling up from the deep waters. Yeah. But we like to see more of it. But yeah, okay, we do our best.
Well, I would pretty much agree that the day begins after sundown the night before. That's why we have Christmas Eve the night before Christmas, and we have New Year's Eve the night before New Year's. In other words, I think the clocks we have are pretty much right.
Yeah, but then the clocks are starting at midnight.
Yeah, and I would say that they're pretty much right. I mean, they might be a couple hours off here and there, but...
Yeah, if you go six to the in front, then it's early morning. Then it's all right. Yeah.
But I mean, I think it says somewhere in the New Testament, Christ said, "Know ye not that the 12 hours in the day."
Yeah, there are 12 hours in the day.
Yeah, so
from the Greek,
from
the Greco-Roman,
from
the Greco-Roman perspective, there are 12 hours in a day and 12 hours in a night.
So the day can't include the night.
Well, in the Greco-Roman perspective, it didn't. But when we try to match that up to a day in the sense of one evolution of the Earth on its axis, that then we really can't account yet, you know, for the night. We have to put it one day or the other.
They usually quote in Genesis where it says evening and the day.
And the morning.
Was it evening and the morning where the first day? But the thing is, it doesn't say anything about the night. And I'm wondering whether the evening, you know, the word evening was the period when it, you know, like we have dawn and dusk when it was adjusting from darkness to light. And somehow over the centuries, evening's sort of been gradually changed to mean, you know, the darkness in the, you know, at night.
Well, right, but if I had to make the clock, I would start the day after the sun goes down. So midnight is pretty safe. I mean, you might want to consider it 10 p.m. or 9 p.m. In some seasons, but midnight is pretty safe, what we call midnight.
Don't forget, one half of the world is in the light, and the other half of the world is in the dark.
In the dark.
So it's the whole globe. It's either light or dark. That's the division, night and day.
Yeah.
But I think our ancestors were right when they put Christmas. I mean, not that I would celebrate Christmas in the sense that it's celebrated, right? But they put Christmas Eve, the evening before Christmas Day. And they did it for a good reason. Yeah. And the same thing with New Year's Eve.
Well, it's the eve before the day. I mean, that is that sounds quite logical.
Yeah.
For no other reason than it being logical. That the evening's previous evening.
Pilgrim said when she wakes up, the day starts. When she goes to bed, the day ends. Right. And that's the way the Greeks and the Romans looked at it. And that's why Christ said there are not 12 hours in a day. And the Greeks actually split their day into 12 hours and their night into four watches. And we see that right in the New Testament. The third watch of the night, the first watch of the night. Yeah. The first watch of the night would be roughly the first 3 hours after the sun goes down, or from 9 p.m. to midnight, say, depending on the season. You know, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And then from 9 p.m. to midnight would be the second watch. And then from midnight to 3 a.m. would be the third watch.
Third
from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. would be the fourth
watch.
But that's not the way the Hebrews in the Old Testament never divided the day like that.
The night.
or the night, right?
Yeah. They didn't divide the day, I hope.
I don't recall one instance with the night being divided like that in the Old Testament, because it was basically a Greco-Roman construct. I don't know if any of the Sophotanian cultures had that concept before the Greeks and the Romans.
Well, I think there's something in the New Testament about the timing, particularly the crucifixion day. The watches were there. I can't quite recall.
Oh, yes, it is in the New Testament, but that's a Hellenistic world. That's a Greek world by that time.
Yeah.
And they're keeping their hours after the Greek method, but which the Romans also shared.
Yes.
The night was divided into four watches and the day into 12 hours.
Mm.
Well, I mean, we still have a 12, most clocks, you know, it's just 12 hours, isn't it? It's only the very modern ones where you have 24 hours on the clock.
Well, exactly. And they did actually have sundials. I mean, we see that sundial, the dial of Ahab, right? Or the dial of Ahab, Ahaz. We see that the ancient Hebrews had a sundial. There's no doubt.
Yeah, right.
To keep track of the time of day.
Right. That's the best you can. Yeah.
And the Greeks also had sundials.
Yeah.
And they must have known, they must have had some device, whether it was an hourglass-like device or whatever it was, they must have had some device for keeping track of the watches of the night. Because the armies kept watch in shifts.
Yeah.
They were literally had a first watch, a second watch, and a third watch, and a fourth watch.
Yeah.
But they must have had a way to be there on time to relieve the guy from the previous watch.
Yeah, they must have had sunglasses or so, yeah.
Some type of hourglass or something. Maybe
like
they
kept
it by the stars, but that would shift throughout the season.
Stars, yeah. Or even water glasses they could have had. If they didn't have glass, then they had water. That's right. Yeah.
Well, they definitely had some device by which to keep track of watches at night.
Yeah, certainly.
And announce them from the wall. Yeah. But we hear the old phrase, third watch and all is well, right? Second watch and all is well. Fourth watch and all is whatever.
Yeah, by night when it's not cloudy, they could have used easily the stars. In the right season. Yeah.
Well, maybe Clifton would like to comment on the daily calendar. He's written at length on it. Maybe we could twist his arm.
Yeah, let's see.
Maybe he's not even listening. Maybe he just showed up and went off to the kitchen or something.
Well, I'm listening, all right.
What did
you want me to comment on?
Oh, just the day calendar in the Hebrew Old Testament. There seems to be some people in Europe disagree with the beginning of the day, the evening before. That's all.
Well, I think it's pretty well established in the New Testament that the day started at sun. As far as our reckoning the time worldwide, I have a hunch that maybe when Christ told the Deans and the knights that were around there at the time taken away from you.
I'm sorry, Clifton. You're cutting out a little. We're not catching all the words.
Well, I'm sorry about that. Does it help if I talk a little louder?
Yes, I'm sure that would help.
Good.
Well, anyway, I kind of believe that the kingdom changed from Judea to some nation, said the kingdom be taken from you and given to another nation that's worthy of it. And I kind of believe that nation was England, or Great Britain, what it used to be. And it's odd today, you know, our central timing, Greenwich Standard Time, Greenwich, England. And so I kind of think maybe timing moved a little bit when the kingdom moved.
Oh.
Yeah, probable.
But I've recently run into some real good documentation that Israel used a lunar solar calendar. I know there's a lot of debate, you know, which calendar, you know, there's about, must be about 50 different calendars out there. Yeah. But this, it wasn't my original research on it. Can't think of the guy's name now. It slips my mind. Anyway, he was in World War II, during World War II, and in the Air Force and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, he got to figuring out and decided to put together 30-day calendar, 29-day calendar, you know, a solar calendar, I should say, with 1 month 30 days, the next month 29, the next day's 30, and so on. And he started in at the time of the original Passover, and you know every day happened right. It just fits in there like a hand in a glove. All those days fall right in place in that calendar. Now he didn't figure the whole year round or something like that, or get into intercalary days and a calendar that type would require. But proof enough to me that our calendar, when we used an Egyptian month, but their month, whatever it was, changed to our first month, and so you know it's odd that all those holidays would fall right in place.
What are you talking about? Is James L. Porter?
Yeah, Porter is his name, James L. Porter, and but anyway, it'll be coming out. In my next mailing, of course, it'll be on the internet whenever Bill gets it on there. I've finished the documents there, and it'll be Watchman Teaching Letter
152.
152. You know, at least you can look it over. You got a right to disagree, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Amazing how many different views there are on the calendar. It certainly keeps us all busy looking into all these things. You can't rest on your laurels and draw lines under things these days.
Yeah.
I've been looking at your teaching lesson today, Clifton, you know, trying to sort out the beast of the field. Very interesting. So there's all these things that keep us on our toes and keep us studying. Well, I'm very thankful for your teaching letters.
All I can say is that beast of the field thing, you know, but we had a long discussion about that Tuesday night, and I wish I'd recorded it, but I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
And Clifton was there with me, and Eli claims that... there's a disparity between Clifton's interpretation of scripture and natural history, but there certainly is not. There is no disparity.
No, I had to compare Eli's paper on it and Clifton's. It took me all day, but I came to the conclusion that Clifton had mentioned natural history and archaeology in his paper. I had to come to a conclusion there.
Well, Eli is making assumptions about natural history that he can't make. We don't know when the you see, most of the races as we know them are fairly recent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And
yes.
These these other forms of so-called man that are found in ancient archaeology are really apes, or a lot closer to apes than most of the races as we know them today.
Yes.
There's not one race of people on the planet today that anybody can point to with any confidence and say they're the beast created in Genesis 6.
No.
You can't do it.
No.
They're all mixed. It's demonstrable in their own culture and social interaction and history that they're all mixed. We can't point to any one of them with any confidence and say, that's them. They're the beasts of Genesis 6. They're two-legged beasts.
That's impossible. Yeah, that's so.
And Eli claims that because the word che means living, that anything living today must have been part of that Genesis 6 beast creation. And that's simply ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous because if I had a baby with a black woman, can we point to that bastard and say, oh, he's part of that beast creation? Yahweh wouldn't take credit for that. It's a direct violation of the law.
Yeah.
No, and also looking at the creation itself that's so perfect, and and these people were all in the continent of Africa, tucked away, living their own existence. It was only until we went there and discovered them. I don't think that if the Almighty had created them, they wouldn't have been like that. They wouldn't have been tucked away there. They would have been more generally distributed. That's just the thoughts I've had today. I mean, those first explorers, they discovered them in Africa. And from there on, they've begun to spread out. But that doesn't mean to say that they are the original creation. And they do resemble the ape people. Because there's even pictures in anthropology showing you how we've all come from apes, and give you the pictures, how they started. And then it goes up, you see the pictures, about 5 mutations. So even they, without knowing it, are telling us something through anthropology.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, on Monday I addressed Sword Brethren, who was supporting Eli's position, and I think I just tore him up, and even Sword Brethren more or less admitted that I addressed all of Eli's statements pretty well. And he asked if I would have a conference on the issue, and I told him that I would defend my position on the Genesis 6 creations of man with any time against anybody, basically. Now, Eli likes to quote this fellow Davies, and I'm going to give you an example of what I just pointed out to Eli. He sent this preliminary version of his paper out and asked a few people to look it over, and I sent him back about a dozen points of major problems with it. And one of them was that this fellow Davies, with this Genesis Revisited or Genesis Reconsidered book or whatever it was that Eli was distributing and talking about last year, and I think he did a Sunday program on it. Well, this guy, supposedly a 30-year Hebrew expert, right? And Clifton's pointed this out before, but this guy, supposedly a 30-year Hebrew reading expert, reads Genesis 1:26 and sees Adam, and reads Genesis 2:7 and sees Adam.
Yes.
And uses that as his reasoning that they must be two different creations of Adam. Well, the other night I asked Eli, what about Genesis 1:27? Because Genesis 1:26 does say Adam. But Genesis 1:27 says Eth Ha Adam in all the Hebrew manuscripts I was able to check. Mm-hmm. Well, that takes that Davies book and just destroys it. The whole thing is just pure garbage. The whole book is garbage.
It's dangerous.
It's all based on a false premise. He's trying to make a distinction between these two Adams, because Genesis 1:26 doesn't have the Eth in the article. But Genesis 1:27, where it says, and God created man, it says, Eth Ha Adam.
Mm.
The article is there. Yeah. So that whole thing, and Eli doesn't even realize that. There's a lot of problems with this, and plus Eli has me listed as undecided in his paper on my position. And I'm not one bit undecided. I'm not one bit undecided. Just because I say that there's no way we could know something doesn't mean that I'm undecided about it. That's my decision. So that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. So.
Yeah.
Sea life problem, yeah.
Yes. it's so easy to, if one doesn't really go into it and study it, it's not an easy thing with all the mistranslations in the Bible. I mean, one has to
everything up. Exactly, but I would, if you know, if I had to pick one, if I, you know, like you sign up for a belief, like you sign up on you become a football fan and pick a team, right?
Yeah.
I'm not like that. I don't have to pick a team. I don't have to sign up for a belief like I pick a team and fanatically stay with it. And we should get beyond that idea. Well, if I had to side with somebody on the issue, I would have to side with Clifton. But my position from a rational point of view is that. Now, let's separate the ape hominids from the hominids of which scientists consider to be man, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say that a hominid is a two-legged being with the power and faculty of speech and the ability to make simple tools. Which is what a Negro is, right? Basically, or what a Chinaman is, right? Yeah. Now if I had to say that if you asked me, were there this type of hominid in the beast creation in Genesis, I would have to say, we don't know, and you can't prove it one way or another. That's what I would have to say. That's not being undecided. You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
I'm confident enough in what I believe to state that there's something that we can't know.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean...
Eli asserts that we can know this, and I would say that Eli's not being true about that, because we cannot know it. Prove it to me. Yeah. You know, so what scientists found these Homo erectus skeletons? Can you prove to me that Homo erectus had the faculty of speech? And can you prove to me, without a doubt, that Homo erectus wasn't created by the fallen angels, rather than Yahweh?
Right.
No, you can't prove that. You can't prove either way.
No, that's true. Because speech is a very big question.
Right. And Eli wants to pretend to know something that he can't possibly know, and basically that's what I told him the other night. Now, whether he likes that or not isn't my problem.
No.
I'm not going to make up a story about prehistory in order to exalt myself or in order to shut down any possible questions or any possible... that there are things that we don't know, and we have to admit as adults that there's things that we can't know or we don't know yet.
No, that's true.
And that's the way I look at the Genesis 1 and 2 situation. Now I tried to mediate that last year, and when I wrote my Genesis 2 page on Christogenia for my Christogenia overview, I tried to express that. Evidently, I didn't express it clearly enough, and I'm going to have to rewrite it. And before the end of December, I'm going to try. But if I had to pick a side, I would have to side with Clifton. And this is why. Because even if there were beasts, the capability of speech and reasoning in the six-day creation, which I kind of doubt, right, that there were. But even if there were, as Eli asserts, can you point to one tribe of non-Adamic people on the face of this earth today and say, that was them?
No.
Of course you can't. And you can't find them in the archaeological record. You can't do it. So I would, if I was going to be wrong, I would rather err on the side of safety and side with Clifton.
Yeah.
There were no hominids with the capability of speech or reasoning in the Genesis creation. But if there were, well, so what? You know, so I'm wrong. So but what? I made my error on the side of safety. Because Christ only divides the world, and he does this three times in Scripture. Not just once, three times into good kinds and bad, the good kind and the bad kind, right?
Yeah.
He only divides the world into wheat and tares. He only divides the world into sheep and goats. In neither of those three instances, we have three witnesses now, in neither of those instances is there a third party. Oh, today, the people of the earth are either sheep or goats. And we know who the sheep are, and that makes everybody else goats. Period. Everybody else is a goat. And Eli, there's no third choice. I'm sorry, there just ain't. And I would, you know, if I've gone here with Eli many times in the programs, and he hasn't really disputed me. But he still doesn't believe
it. Well, I think it sort of eases the pressure off people if they can.
Well, you're right. You're right, Betty. You're entirely right. I'm sorry to cut you off, but you're entirely right. And that's called compromise. And compromise was the second sin in the garden.
It just makes everything easier. Yes.
Yeah, that's why we had.
So that's my entire assessment of the argument between Clifton and Eli, and who's on the right and who's not. And it's objective.
I agree.
Yeah, there's an additional one. When you're concerning these virgins with the oil lamps, the ones with the oil and the other one without the oil, there's no third party. Same thing.
No, that's true.
I just come across. I didn't think it in this way, but it's a good one to realize that as well. Indeed, it is so. That there is no third party. Yeah.
There was a third of the angels that rebelled, and there must be...
Well, Eli says that there were white people here before Adam, and he's right. But Eli wants to attribute that to a separate Genesis 1:26-27 Adamic creation, and he's wrong. If there were white people here before Adam, it's simply because fallen angels had to be white. If they weren't white, they weren't angels. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, there must have been hundreds of thousands of them. It wasn't just a small group.
Right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, it wasn't 10. Yeah. A third of the stars of heaven isn't 10, and it isn't 20. It's a bunch.
Yeah. It's a huge.
I mean, so many legions he could have called. A third of them broke away. So it's a tremendous number.
Well, I'm sorry to steal Clifton's thunder, but I had to get that out. That's basically what I said the other night when we discussed this on Tuesday.
Yes.
That's correct.
Yes. I'm sure Clifton doesn't disagree with me anyway.
Yeah,
well, he's still there.
Over in Hebrews, no party there, third party there either, bastards and sons.
But, well, right, exactly, and that's a fourth example. You're absolutely right. You're either a bastard or a son. You're not, if there was a race of people anywhere that would have been created by Yahweh but weren't Adam, Paul would have said, you're either a bastard, a son, or a hottentot. But he didn't say that.
Yeah, that is so.
Christ didn't say you're either a wheat, a tare, or a Chinaman. But yet there's Chinamen all amongst the wheat and the tares, so the Chinamen have to fall into one of those two categories. What are they, wheat or tares?
Right. Yeah. That's right. I didn't think about it in that way, but it is really correct, yeah. It's a good thing to remember. Yeah. Always something to learn.
Yes, never stop learning. The more you know, the less you know. the more you learn, the less you know.
But, well, that's the realization that we should all make, is that none of us could ever know everything. And when we come to a certain point in our introspection, right, because new knowledge should always cause us to become introspective and reflective and to consider it and how it fits into our worldview. And from that point, we either have to reject the knowledge or we have to change our worldview, right? And that's what adults do. And we should all be capable of changing our Weltanschauung, right, our worldview, when we find a better, more correct knowledge. And some of us just refuse to do that. But when you get to that point in your knowledge, you realize that there's a lot that you don't know. And that's why you always have to be willing to study and to change your if I found anything that refuted any one of my papers, I would go rewrite that paper and admit that I had to change my mind about this, or I had to change my mind about that. That's the way it is. That's what men do. Even the most learned scholars and academics should have to realize that they have to act that way.
Absolutely.
It's simple-minded little children that believe, oh, I'm inspired by God and everything I say is right, no matter what. Pete Peter.
Imagine.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, absurd. Yeah. Imagine. Yeah. That's why open-mindedness is so important, that you have to understand what some think about it and get it in and learn of it. That's a lot of people refuse to, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, I'm afraid that Eli is really doing himself no service with this position that he has.
Pity. That's a pity, because
it's worse than Ron Wyatt. But, well, because Eli won't let it go. That's why it comes up again.
Yeah.
I certainly think it's a very dangerous line to take.
Yeah.
But I'm sure a lot of this stuff is going to come up again and again. The Ron Wyatt thing is going to come up again. There's no doubt.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, when I do my programs with I really enjoy working with the guy. I do. He's amicable.
Sure.
He's always willing to listen. He's a great listener.
Yeah.
He's probably a better listener, much better listener than I am. I'm a terrible listener. And I know it. But he's good to work with, and I enjoy working with him. And every chance I get when we encounter scripture that allows me to do it, I try to make it a point of getting these things across. And he doesn't really debate with me. He doesn't debate with me. And the things that he did debate with me about, he stopped debating me with about. You know, and I don't know how he could not debate with me when I bring something up and then still maintain a position that we can't agree on. I don't know. Maybe it's me.
Well, I think it might be, I don't know if he's much different to you in age, I don't know, but, you know, you have spoken about the people taking things metaphorically or actually, if you know what I mean, and maybe he keeps going towards the metaphorical feel about the scripture. And not a true plain reading. Maybe there's a difference. He doesn't quite. I mean, I must say that some things I go into a metaphorical understanding of it when really it should be just a plain scripture.
When Paul says that you're either a bastard or a son, you can't consider any of them to be metaphors. I mean, a bastard is a bastard, and a son is a son.
I
know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And that, the Greek word for that word bastard is nathos, and nathos means bastard. It means what it says.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I think we've all, you know, it depends on where you started to learn your scripture. A lot of it has been metaphoricalized, if that's a word, and it's
there are a lot of people, even identity pastors, that just can't lose churchianity 100%.
No.
They just can't do it.
Yeah.
So we're going to continue to have these disputes and until
until
Christ comes back.
Yeah.
You're sure. Oh yeah. Yep.
That don't mean we have to. That doesn't give us a license not to address this stuff and click on the right thing.
No, it's wonderful to be able to discuss it, you know.
Right. Right. On international
scale. Absolutely wonderful.
Super.
To have that option.
Yeah. Yeah, the best we can have. Pity that my father didn't have this opportunity 20 years ago. Oh, it would have been day and night on the screen.
But, well, you know, this is a 24/7 chat server, and Eli can come here anytime he wants. He's only been here twice.
Yeah.
And he knows it's open all the time, and he knows there are people here every night, but he's only been here twice. Yeah. I'm not going to judge him for that. The man does work outside of the home. He's a contractor, and he does work hard at times, so I can't really fault him.
Yeah.
No.
That's right.
No, all this, no, people find it difficult.
But could he have been of the Bavarian descent?
Oh? Eli says that he's of Bavarian descent.
Really? Oh. That would be. But then, I wonder about his family name then. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another name. That's right, I know. This is Yaya. Okay. Hey, James doesn't sound German. That is wrong. That's right. It's the other name. And the other name could be, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he could have searched for his ancestors. Then it could easily be that he came from Bavaria. It's a big country and a lot of people still. Yeah.
Well, that is his true name.
I know. It's his pseudonym.
I don't know what his real name is. I don't care.
No, it's not important, is it? It's not important.
I don't know if Joseph November's an alias he uses or if Eli James is an alias he uses. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's his business. Yeah. That's the way I look at it.
What's a Knockwember?
Yeah, Joseph Knockwember. That's probably closer. Yeah.
It looks to me November, but
November.
Yeah, November.
No.
Hello. Nah, that's too. That's more.
That's German. That's German.
Joseph Frankenstein. Yeah. not the monster of Frankenstein.
I like to keep my life simple and just go by my name, right?
Right.
I mean, nobody would ever claim to be a Fink that's not a Fink. I don't think, anyway. Except a Jew.
Yeah. I had to work with a colleague of mine. That was Herbert Fink. Yeah. Here from Germany, from Bavaria, yeah.
Well, there's a town named Finkenbach right next, about 50 kilometers away from where my family came from, before they came
from. Yeah. Right, yeah.
It came from Gallheim, which is near Worms, west of Worms. I'm sorry, I'm screwed up.
West of Worms. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I wish I could go there and check it out, but I probably shouldn't.
Well, it takes 4 hours car drive from here.
I don't think they'd let you back.
Yeah, right, that's what I'm afraid of. That's why I'm not going.
Yeah. You can always come into Europe via Belgium or so, or whatever.
Not the Mein Kampf website, you can't.
If you put Mein Kampf PDF into the Google, I come out second. I come out ahead of Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Mike Prothink discovered that the other night. He said, how did you do this? I said, I don't know. It did itself. I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Well, I hope Clifton twists your arm, Bill, to get the Watchman teaching letter 152 out, because I'm fascinated now to see what's in it.
Well, I'm hoping to have his material posted by Monday or Tuesday.
All right. Oh. That's good.
Tomorrow I got to engulf myself in getting ready for the programs on a weekend, right?
Yeah.
I got to get into Jeremiah and make my notes, at least for the first four chapters. And for John, the first epistle of John.
Right. Well, I'm going to let you get on with it because I'm going to say good night to everybody.
Okay.
Dorcas, may Yahweh bless you. Thank you.
Dorcas,
good night.
Yes.
It's been lovely to be with
you. Good night,
you.
Dorcas.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah. Right.
What else do we have today?
Well.
These shows, these programs never warm up until about 2 hours into them.
That's
the way it is, I guess.
That's normal, yeah. Iceland wants a pizza. A real pizza. He's hungry. Oh, he just had it. Okay. The poor man. And that's called upper area. Growing boy. California style. Yeah, why not? Growing sideways.
What kind of pizza could you possibly get in Iceland?
In an old Iceland.
Goat's cheese.
All kinds of things. All opportunities there.
Sandwich.
Even.
Domino's in Iceland.
Domino's there.
The tomatoes in or something.
They're imported. Oh, they have these greenhouses. That's right. It's warm enough as sunlight comes in. That's right. A fish pizza. No, not to me. I don't like fish. They are for the sea. Let them swim.
You don't like fish,
Matthew? Nah, I never liked it. They tried it from early youth on. Even they tried it with money. They said, if you are taking this money, you can get it the money if you take this tiny bit of fish. Never. I never liked it. Never.
No, I don't like fish either.
Having such a hair by the... Then they're eating it by the tail, so glug, going in. Oh, you better have a good glass of wine, or whiskey, or whatsoever. But not that fish.
Even though I never really did see...
That I made for the
German, you know, fish cuisine.
They do exist.
I imagine in the North country, they would have those... part of their diet.
On the Baltic. Yeah, but there's a big difference between Baltic fish or the North Sea fish. And if you have a cod? A cod from the North Sea or from the East Sea. Oh, that makes a terrible difference. If you're used to have a cod to eat it, and then you get one from the Eastern dishes. Oh, what is this? It's terrible. A friend of mine had it, and we were during the summer in Munich, for he did want to see Munich by day, and when the shops are open, we were there on a Saturday, and then all the closed last year. So we came along a big shop which having lots of fish in whatever size and whatsoever. And he comes from the fisher village, IJmuiden in the Netherlands, and he's very well informed about fish and he likes fish. And then he said, well, let's go in. Shall I take a herring? I said, man, you're informed about it. You're going to look first at the counter whether that is a good herring or not. He said, yeah, it might be a disaster. I think I'm certainly sure it is a disaster, for he is used to have the real...
Hello?
Matthew dropped out again. He must have. Well, he's about to disconnect any second now. Bad connection.
I was going to say I don't like fish either because, I do occasionally have it, but I think it was when I was young during the war years,
okay.
The fish he was given was often gone off. I didn't know, so that probably what put me off fish. So it wasn't fresh.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. Fresh fish, if, then it must be fresh. But when it is translated, as it, if it transported as it is here through Europe, and it's days along, it's no more fresh. So indeed he abstained, my friend, and he said, I'll better don't risk it. He said, you better take some from local here, not from the Netherlands. That's too dangerous. But he is in a good position. He is capable of eating fish at any time he wants.
Yeah.
What about the Eskimo mongrels? Oh, did Lynn step again? There you are. Now, I prefer to have something else, and that's well known in England, and that is beef eater, isn't it?
Yeah,
either in beef. The bottle or real beef. Yeah. Yeah. And the best beef you can get is beef from the hoof. Huh? You can see them in the field still. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the best and beef I is the one admit, that's fed on grass and not all these artificials.
Right. Yeah, certainly. And the best beef I've ever been eating, is it's crazy, the idea, that was in Utah, in Delta, in Utah. There we were in the motel for acquaintances of us, and we got a portion of beef. I couldn't finish it. It was so much. And it was so tender. It was really gorgeous. A super piece. I said, oh, I can't take it home, unfortunately. But it was really top class. Yeah, straight from the field today. No problem at all. Yeah. That's many years ago now. I was with my colleague there from the company. And what was it? I came in the company there. Was in Pullman, wasn't it? Oh, boy. Time is going so fast. 69. Oh, yeah, there was a 96. Nah? In 89. In 89, we went to the United States there for Delta in Utah. And we had our round trip, and then we came across these people there, and we had that dinner. Oh, that was lovely. The only thing you couldn't get there was wine. That was bad luck for us. But okay. The good piece of meat was really covering. That's a super. Yeah. But for, yeah, okay, that's in the area where you can get real beef. It's really top class. Oh, yeah. But on the other hand, we have been eating all kind of beefs and whatsoever, even in Munich, in the times that we were service engineers there. And, well, I must say, that was also very, very well. I can't complain. Yeah. What is he putting on now? What is that? Scaling Safaria? What is all this now? Get peculiar things now to see. What is this? Oh! Oh, that's interesting beef. That's good beef. That looks good. If it's beef, it's good. Yeah. That's it. That's probably a dish from Iceland or so.
That's raw fish. It's disgusting.
Is that raw fish? I'll put it away immediately. That's wasting my taste. Yeah.
People,
oh, yeah.
People think raw fish is good because the Japs didn't have fire.
Yeah. Fermented herring. No. But a bit. No, that's not. I'm a beef eater. Yeah, we eat that here. Yeah, that is right. That is right. Yeah. Swedish, yeah.
Well, I stay away from beef eater. I stay away from all liquor because it's basically the entire industry. Since Prohibition has been controlled by the Jews.
Yeah. Oh, certainly. But it was my grandfather who was born in the house where the distillery was. And the distillery was my great-grandfather. And it was a good running company. So between 1872, he took over the company, and he died in 1910. And that was a well-to-do company because the people were drinking so much. And they had a lot of good stuff. And we still have photographs of it, etc. And I have still of these flasks. I have some of them. I have them in store in my Chester's historical room. I may not complain. So I may say nothing negative about a good glass of wine, etc. But that's dishonoring the family. Yeah. But that was at the time that the white ones were still having... having a wine or winery company, etc. And today's time, that's all in jury hands.
That's right.
Yeah. Unfortunately. It's
well, somewhere on my personal
and
site... Somewhere on my personal site, there's a picture of a brewery that my family owned. In the
right, I've seen it, yeah. Yeah, right, I've seen that. Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, that's right, I remember. Yeah. Yeah, that is so. Yeah. Yeah.
Fortunately, I still have bottles here with the contents in, but it's from a later date, but still the family name on, etc. And yeah, they are in the museum here. Oh, I have to get that on the wall before the conference starts. Wee, that's a lot of work still. Yeah, okay. I'll see. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and that's also interesting for Chris, that the red wine is still bubbling. It's not fermenting, but it's standing now on the table, and in the early in the morning, when sunlight is not on, then it's a bloop, bloop by that airlock. And I say, hey, it's still fermenting. Oh, let go on. Yeah. The battery.
No, they haven't blown up.
So
yet.
I don't need to bottle it, just keep it on. No, that's why the water lock is on top of it. And it's just going on. Oh, let it go on. The better the quality is. Yeah. I'm not in a hurry. The stuff can go on. Can stay there all the time. Yeah. Yeah.
What year was that bill that you've just put up, that building? What year was it?
It was built in 1872.
Quite a fine building, see? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they divested it in Prohibition, and my great-grandfather, my great-great-grandmother lost a lot of my family. My great-grandfather shared the inheritance in the 1890 market crash.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
In the Depression of the 1890s. And then whatever wasn't lost by her was, my great-grandfather followed the horses. He was a gambler. He was a bum.
Oh. Yeah, that works, but it's dangerous. I wouldn't do. Yeah. A lot of people lost their money and all such things.
Yeah, he basically lost whatever was left on the horses.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah. Pity, yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Now I see something. There it is. Loading. Now, Pewter is grumbling here. Yeah, here it is. That's the building. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Yeah. 18 concerns. Yeah. Lagerbier. Yeah. A real Lagerbier brewery. Yeah. 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 It's a nice picture.
I got that reproduction hanging on my wall down here.
Right, it is.
It was my, a cousin has the original lithograph. It had been torn in half at one point. And we don't know why or when, but he had it restored, and he made reproductions and gave them to all his first cousins, which was my father.
Yeah,
and I'm a second cousin.
Okay. Hey, I can do that in the same way, to put on the internet the original photographs of the old company. Could do, yeah, if I have time. Yeah, maybe interesting.
Which company is that?
The distillery in downtown Leiden.
Oh, right.
That's where there are still original photographs picked up in.
I thought you were talking about Siemens you work for.
No, not for Siemens. No, it was my grandfather's eldest half-brother. He was a photographer. He liked it. And his old camera I still have in my camera collection. And he went down the street and picked up some photographs in about, say, 1895, about around that time. And then you're seeing that street is empty except for a few bicycles. If you're coming in now, it's filled up with cars. He can't believe it, that it was empty in those days. And you even did have these gas lanterns. That's long ago, but they were there. They're still in the photographs, and that's interesting. I'll put them on the internet. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. Maybe I'll find some time in the Sunday afternoon to do so. Yeah, that's a good thing. Why not? Yeah. I never thought about it, but it is a good idea. So, I'm coming back here. Yeah. I said, do we have a problem? No. Yeah. Yeah, thinking food eyes.
Evidently, that's all he thinks about is food.
He must be hungry still after dinner.
And it certainly wasn't his breakfast. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay, he's still capable of laughing. Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, my dinner will probably be on by 5 o'clock, so I'm going to just devour it after all this. I'm starved. I had nothing but a bowl of cereal, a bowl of Cheerios since I woke up, and a banana.
Oh, that's too less. I wouldn't be able to survive on that.
Well, I mean, I've only been up about 8 hours. Well, about 9 hours, maybe. I don't eat much in the morning. I don't like to eat in the morning. I just I can't eat for 3 or 4 hours. I'll drink coffee until lunchtime.
Well, I'm up now 12 hours, 13 hours, 14 hours, 15 hours, yeah.
Yeah, well, you're 6 hours ahead of me, so that's about right.
Yeah, burgers and fries. I cook my own dinner. I don't mind. Yeah, bake my own bread, etc. Yeah.
I told you, we don't have any problem. We just figure you're hungry, that's all.
Yeah.
I know you're making me hungry.
Yeah.
Oh, you shouldn't shoot yourself. When I was 17, I was always hungry too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's growing up. Then you're.
I was 17. I was 6'4" and weighed about 170 pounds, and I was always hungry. And no matter how much I ate, I couldn't gain weight.
Yeah. You have some of these people. Oh, he's leaving.
Yeah, he always leaves abruptly when he thinks people pick on him. I don't know.
Hey, we'll come back. Yeah. But I have some, still have some colleagues who can eat whatever they want. And they have an after dinner. They have even three of these after dinner things. They are needle thin. And they just burn it through, whatever they eat. It's not really very well. There is some disturbance in their stuff exchanging in their whole crowd body was doing wrong.
When I was young, I was like that. I got older, and now those days are over. I wish I could be like that again.
Yeah, no, I'm glad what I have now. I'm satisfied. I'll have to, just having enough. It's good enough. A satisfactory portion. And I'm satisfied. Yeah. Otherwise, you have to work too long in the kitchen. Huh? I have more to do by day. And certainly now, when I'm still in problems with that nasty pump, it doesn't want to run up. And when it runs up, the oil pump doesn't work. And then the machine stops for whatever reason. See? Oh, yeah. Icelander skin is too thin. Yeah. The poor man. Way too thin. Yeah. Well, on the films, I have seen what they are eating there. Then I say, it's an interesting country to go to. But that food, not to me. Yeah. Okay, bye, you say. Yeah, all right. And next time he is there. Yeah. So it is. Okay, what else do we have?
I don't know. I'm 3.5 hours is plenty for me. I'm talked out.
Right.
I think I'm ready to
go and have a rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. Okay.
And I'll see everybody on, whenever 2 weeks from now is. I'm about brain dead. I can't even think about when 2 weeks from now is. It's the beginning of December. December 2nd.
I have the map here.
And shall we make December it at the same time again?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Good.
Yeah, okay.
That's great for me.
But I just thought it would be good moving it up an hour because everybody's in a little earlier in the wintertime.
That's a good idea.
The red mark here. That's the idea, so I write it down here. Okay, that's for 7 o'clock in the evening.
Your time.
Our time, yeah. okay.
Yeah, but my time it's 6 o'clock.
That's 6 o'clock. It's our Middle European time. Huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
You're sticking to GMT.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That is done 1900 hours. 1900. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Bill, again.
Okay. Thank you. And I appreciate you being here. And may Yahweh bless you all.
Thank you. Good night.
Cheerio. Have a good time and see you in a second. Huh? Okay, bye-bye.
Tell me to her and...
What's that? Oh.